All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue and here until midnight. Full show tonight. Coming up after 8:30, John Weidman will join us to preview tomorrow's game and talk about the big win last night. That'll be coming up at 8:30. 9 o'clock, Jeff Tuckman will be in here with his monthly visit, and we've got some really cool DVDs and stuff to give away. We've got Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, in the 10 o'clock hour. And at 10:30, it's the movie reviews, as it always is every week. And it's Colin and Eric will be joining me to review all the new movies. That's all coming up right here on WGN. Always thrilled to kick off the show with my hero, the one, the only, Roy Leonard joins us every other week, and we welcome Roy to the show. Hey, Roy.
Hi there.
How are you, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm great, but I am still on a high from that hockey game last night.
Unbelievable, wasn't it?
Oh, I tell you, it's just got me. I can't, but, you know, I've been watching the other series, the one between Montreal and New York.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky enough to win tomorrow night, we're going to have a tough time against the Rangers. They are good.
Yeah, they are. I was rooting for the Habs, though, all the way. So I was a little disappointed they didn't win. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough series. There's no question about it, you know. But
you know, if we do win and play New York, you know who's going to love that? NBC.
Yeah.
Because they'll have New York and Chicago, you know, as audiences, and they're just going to go through the roof.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting. But, yeah, I'll be at the game tomorrow, and I couldn't be more excited. And John Weidman is going to jump in here in a little while, and we're going to preview the game and talk about last night's big win.
So, but I saw a movie this week, and
yeah.
I presume that you will review it with Eric and
Colin.
Colin.
Yeah.
Later on. And that is A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
Now, my headline was rude, crude, and mildly amusing.
Mm.
It's one of those movies that, well, Seth MacFarlane, he's got an ego. Boy, has he got an ego. And he used it because he not only helped to write this movie, he directed in it, he stars in it. And it's a great idea. He goes back to Arizona in 1882, and MacFarlane plays this sheep herder, Albert Stark, who's kind of a misfit. He hates the West. He hates all the violence in the West. And then his girlfriend dumps him because he walks away from a gunfight. She takes up with kind of a slick, wealthy man about town, oh, deliciously played by Neil Patrick Harris. And then his best friend is a nerd whose girlfriend is a prostitute. And, but all he really wants to do is get out of town and move to San Francisco. Now, there's a heavy. There has to be a heavy in the movie, and that's played by Liam Neeson, who, when he isn't robbing stagecoaches, abuses his girlfriend. Oh, and the highlight of this film is the girl who plays his girlfriend, Charlene. Is it Theron?
Charlize Theron.
Theron.
Yeah.
She is not only beautiful, but she's the best thing in the movie. Anyway, she teaches Albert how to shoot a gun because he has a big showdown coming up. Now, this could have been a very funny satire, but for some reason, McFarlane goes the low road, and he decides in the space of 2 hours to see how many people he can offend, how many references to body parts can be made, how much profanity could be included, and how many raunchy seams you can fit in 2 hours. I don't want to list them all, but just to give folks an idea of what they got to look forward to, I mentioned his buddy has a girlfriend who's a prostitute. Now, they want to get married, but they won't consummate their relationship till because they're Christians. But she is servicing up to 15 guys a day. And in one scene, she describes what some of her customers want to do. There's a musical number that features dancing, singing sheep, close-ups of their genitalia, a scene where they spray Albert with their urine, human, animal feces. They're all gleefully displayed in this movie with close-ups. Now, I say that only for people who, for one reason or another, decide to see this movie. You just got to know what you're in for. Now, McFarlane is a likable but kind of a bland screen presence. The supporting roles are terrific. There are some uncredited cameos by some very well-known personalities. They don't make any sense, but they're funny. The cinematography is absolutely gorgeous. There are these breathtaking panoramic views of sandstone formations and mesas and the wind-blown sand that dots the beautiful Monument Valley, where all the great westerns were once made. The score... rousing. It goes back to all those great Max Steiner and Elmer Bernstein and Alfred Newman scores. So your reaction to A Million Ways to Die in the West will pretty much depend on your tolerance of sophomoric toilet humor, constant profanity, and really tasteless situations. It's naturally rated R. I can't say that I enjoyed the movie. But you know what? I'm awful glad I saw it. Now, I don't know if this makes sense at all. But anyway, those are my thoughts, and I'm dying to know what you guys say later on tonight.
Well, I'll just give you a preview. I hated every frame of that movie.
No kidding.
Yeah, I just...
I thought this was right up your alley.
No. I just... you know, and I liked his last movie. His last movie was... Seth MacFarlane's last movie was a movie called Ted.
Oh, yeah. And, the talking bear.
Yeah, and he... voiced the bear, and I thought that movie was very, very funny, and it was also very crude. I mean, that's his style, is Seth MacFarlane's style. His stuff is very crude, it's vulgar, it's ribald, but not one moment in A Million Ways to Die made me smile. There was a cameo by a comedian late in the film.
Oh yeah,
playing Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, I know it.
That was the only time I laughed the entire movie. That was it.
And the guy from I don't want to mention his name because, you know, I don't want to spoil it. But anyway, A Million Ways to Die in the West. Rude, crude, mildly amusing, but I wouldn't rush off to see it.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we're going to take a quick break. You got some theater to talk about?
A quick thing. And then if you got time, I want to go back over a couple of movies that have been around for a while.
Okay.
That I'm sure you didn't like, but are doing well in spite of you.
Okay. All right, Roy, let's hang on a second, okay, buddy?
Sure.
There you go. Roy Leonard is with us. He's the best, and he's going to talk about some theater and talk about some movies as well. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios. Here, the Showcase Studios, right here on Michigan Avenue overlooking Pioneer Court on a busy Saturday night. Here for a full show tonight till midnight. You can hear me regularly on the overnights here, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. We've got our regular stuff coming up, Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, the movie reviews with Eric and Colin. Also, Jeff Tuckman will be stopping by after 9 o'clock for his monthly visit. We're going to give away some really cool DVDs and answer all of your movie and DVD questions. And after 8:30, the one and only John Weideman, voice of your Chicago Blackhawks here on the radio, is going to join us to recap last night's big win and talk about the upcoming game. But right now, the great Roy Leonard is here to talk about whatever he wants to talk about. And you wanted to mention some theater, Roy?
Yeah, I want to mention a terrific show that is in its final weeks at the Broadway Playhouse over at Water Tower Place. It's a show called Buyer and Seller, a C-E-L-L-A-R. It's enlightening, it's entertaining, and it's funny, but it's only got a couple of more weeks to go. And really, this is the first stop on its national tour. The original star, Michael Urie, some people may know him from Ugly Betty. He plays a struggling actor who takes a job working in the mall that Barbara Streisand has in her Malibu basement.
Right.
That's true. She really does. But one day the lady comes downstairs to play, and they have this bonding thing, and they form this wonderful relationship, and you kind of wonder, will he ever make it upstairs? I mean, it's an outrageous comedy, but it's about the price of fame, the cost of things, the oddest of odd jobs, but it's only going to be at the Broadway Playhouse through June 15th.
Hmm.
And you really ought to go out of your way to try and see it.
So just a couple of weeks left.
Yeah, I know it. And it's really, it's funny. You laugh from beginning to end. To show you how great the nation is thinking now of Chicago theater, the Wall Street Journal devoted an entire page this week to Chicago theater, mainly for a play at Timeline Theater, you know, over on West Wellington.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a musical that never made it big on Broadway, Juno and the Paycock. But they have revived it, and their drama critic really thought it was well worth seeing. And the other play that he mentioned is a new musical called Days Like Today. That's at the Writers Theater over in Glencoe.
Oh, yeah.
On Tudor Court. It's a brand-new musical. He reviewed it well. He says, see it now, and you can say you were there when it was created. He said it's going to get better. He hopes it goes to Broadway.
You know, Writers Theater in Glencoe, those guys for years have done amazing work out there.
Well, they have. I mean, and they've produced some wonderful talent as well.
Yeah.
I don't ordinarily review television, but did you or have you heard about the version on HBO of The Normal Heart?
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I have it on my DVR at home, though.
Yeah, I tell you why. I like the play better, but it is stunningly photographed, beautifully done. The ending is a little different from the play, but the guts is there, and you really ought to try and see it.
They just did a production of Normal Heart here.
Oh,
and David Cromer was in it.
Yeah, it was, and he came and I saw him.
Yeah,
great. And we got another couple, just a couple of
minutes. Yeah, sure, Roy.
Have you ever seen a movie that you knew wasn't particularly good, but you liked it anyway, or you're glad you saw it?
Yeah, that happens, sure.
Now, I recall, wasn't it recently that you did not like the movie Chef?
I did not like Chef, no.
Okay. Now, here's an example. I know it isn't a perfect movie, and yet everybody that I've recommended see this has seen it and loved it.
Mm.
Because it's just so different and warm and wonderful. It's about this chef who goes berserk and gets fired from his job and does something he's always wanted to do. He gets a food truck and he makes his way from Florida up the coast, and he winds up back home. But he has this experience with his best friend and his son, who's always been sort of, he hasn't paid much attention to his son, but they begin to bond and they begin to find that they really enjoy each other's credit. I call it a feel-good movie, and people are going to see it, which pleases me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't recall what you said of Million Dollar Arm.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't seen it. Was it good?
Well, you know, it's an old-fashioned feel-good film. Now, we don't have many of those anymore. But this one, I tell you, it's very inspiring. It's about the agent, sports agent, who's on his last legs, and he's about to go into huge debt.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets this idea about going overseas, and he decides to try and find a cricket player and teach him how to throw a baseball and bring him to America, because America has never had a cricket player, from India, and this will get him a lot of publicity. They shot the whole thing in Mumbai. Mm-hmm. That used to be called Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
The scenes over there will really give you a feeling of a different culture and a different language, and very funny. He finds two boys, brings them to America. I won't tell you any more, except that it's one of those movies where Alan Arkin has one of those small roles that he steals every scene he's in.
Yep.
And Bill Paxton is in it, and he's very good. You try and see it.
I do. I want to, and I'm a big fan of John Hamm's, actually. I think he's terrific. And, I love baseball movies, and it's from the producers of the movie The Rookie from a few years ago with Dennis Quaid, which was also a great baseball movie.
Anyway, it's really good. Can you think of a movie, however, that maybe wasn't too good that you really liked?
Yeah, sometimes a movie is bad and you still like it.
Yeah.
And that happens. That happens. That happens on a regular basis with me. I'll walk out of a movie and I'll go, I know that wasn't a good movie, but I had a good time.
Of course, I noticed lately, though, I go to the movies at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I go over here to the Century in Evanston.
Right.
It's got, 14 screens or something. And I don't know why they bother with critics anymore. The minute people walk out of a movie, they're on their cell phone texting their review to their best friends.
That's right.
And I'm amused by it. I still think we ought to have critics, because Lord knows if we didn't, we'd just get a bunch of crap.
That's true. All right, what are we going to look forward to in a couple of weeks, Roy?
Oh, yeah. Well, by then we'll have some good movies coming out. Or let me put it this way, some interesting movies coming out.
Yeah.
And over here at Northwestern, they're doing Damn Yankees.
Oh.
Which I haven't seen since Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, that was the last time I saw it, was with Lewis, yeah.
But I'm kind of interested. I always liked that show.
Yeah.
My oldest son now, who's almost 60, we took him to see that when he was 8 years old.
Wow.
And he's going to go with me again.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Have a good week.
All right, Roy. Thanks, man. I always appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. There you go. Roy Leonard, everybody. Always a great way to kick off the show. We got a quick break here, and we got the news coming up. And then after 8:30, after the news, John Weideman, your voice of Chicago Blackhawks, is going to join us.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks. Take the attack.
Go Hawks. Yeah, it's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios here, looking out on Michigan Avenue. We're here till midnight tonight. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Jeff Tuchman will stop in for his monthly visit. We'll talk DVDs and answer all your questions and give some really cool stuff away. We've got Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then after 10:30, the movie reviews with Colin and Eric, all right here on 720 WGN. You can call 312-981-7200. You can also send your text to 24720 and hang out with us at facebook.com/Nick D Show. As you heard, I just played Here Comes the Hawks. Game 7 at the UC, Hawks-Kings, tomorrow, 7 o'clock puck drop, 6:30 pregame. And joining us to talk about that and this incredible series is our old friend John Weideman. John, how are you, sir?
Hey, Nick. I'm doing okay, man. I'm just out here in front of the house with my son playing a little street hockey. And
nice.
You're probably wondering, how do you hold the phone to your ear and handle a hockey stick? Well, Nick, I'm trying to perfect the one-handed shot here.
Ah.
So I'm making progress.
Good.
My son's got me beat by a mile.
Well, that's cool. That's good. What about this series, John?
Well, this series is kind of, in some ways, it's lived up to expectations. I mean, they're two good teams. They're the two teams that won the last two Stanley Cups, the Kings in 2012, and then our guys last year. And the Kings really, to me, are they're an outstanding hockey team, and they really are playing, the last two games notwithstanding, because they're both losses, but to get to where they are right now, they have really played over and above the expected level of most teams at this time of the season.
Yeah.
Two seven-game series. They had to They're overachieving, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And you know, you look at that roster and you say, what do you mean? What do you, guys like Kopitar, Gabrick, and, you know, Jeff Carter and the 70s line and Drew Dickey at defense, Jonathan Quick and goal, overachieving? What are you talking about? But as a team, they have really pulled together a bunch of times, and they've gotten themselves in position to where if they win tomorrow night, they go to the Stanley Cup final, and they'll be the first team in the history of the National Hockey League to win 3 7-game series in a row to get there. So, you know, they're going to be a formidable adversary for the Blackhawks tomorrow night. I expect the United Center to be filled to capacity and probably over.
Yeah.
And I expect it to be the loudest crowd of the year, and I expect the Blackhawks to bring their A game as well. So
yeah,
it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and I'll be as loud as possible, just to let you know, John. You know, it wasn't looking good after, you know, game four at all. I mean, I did, you know, I mean, I try to keep a positive outlook, but I got to say, I was very sad, but, you know, and everybody was saying, listen, you remember last year when they played Detroit, and they were kind of in the same situation, but for me, at least, John, I thought the Kings played better against the Hawks this year than the Red Wings did last year in the same series.
I'd give you that.
Yeah.
I'd give you that. The Kings are a strong hockey team.
Yes, they are.
Not that the Red Wings are not, and weren't last year, but I would agree with that. I think the Kings are a much tougher team all around. If you put the two teams against each other, the Red Wings against the Kings, I would take the Kings to come out of that series.
Mm-hmm.
The series are similar in some ways because, you know, the Blackhawks have gotten down 3-1. Like they did to the Red Wings last year. But there's some differences. You know, last year, you know, the Blackhawks in some ways, they kind of self-destructed in some of those games that they lost to the Red Wing. And, you know, in this series, they have been in some ways simply outplayed by the Los Angeles Kings in those losses.
Yeah.
But then they got it together, as champions do. And they have tied the series now after the great win in Game 5 and overtime, and then the game last night out in L.A., really just an exciting couple of games. And, hey, this is anybody's game. It's a one-game series now, and it is going to be in Chicago, which is a blessing for the Blackhawks in a lot of ways because they're 8-1 on home ice, and they play great on home ice, and I think they like their chances. But L.A. is one of those teams that they've won the last two series in the seventh game on the road. So, you know, pick them.
Yeah, it's tough. If anybody wants to join us, you've got a question for John, Hawks related, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You're talking about how they kind of self-destructed during the Detroit series last year. Very, very uncommon of Jonathan Toews to get, you know, 3 penalties in a game, and he got thrown in the box the other night. And I was like, oh, no, we're not going to see this. We're not going to see this happen again.
Yeah, no, I can't see that happening again. I mean, he's a passionate guy, and he, in my opinion, the best captain in hockey.
I agree.
And he tries hard to lead by example. And, you know, when he thinks that the officials have missed a call or maybe they called something inaccurately, he's gonna let them know, but he's gonna try and let them know in his own way. Well, he found out last year, I think, that the acts of disgust just aren't going to go over well with the officials. They'll just ding you again. So the boys pulled it together in Game 5 here at the United Center last year, and they got back on track. They went to Game 6 last year with Michael Frolik scoring that memorable penalty shot goal.
Yep.
And came back and won it in Game 7 with Brent Seabrook's overtime game winner. They're looking for a similar script here tomorrow night, but I don't think they want to get down in the game. I think they're looking to get out to a good start, dictate the tempo of the game, and put the Kings in a position to where they have to fight back to try and tie the game. And I think if they can do that, they have a great chance of winning. But if they get behind the Kings, and Troy Murray, my partner, has made this point a number of times, and it's an excellent point. If you get behind the Kings in a game and you chase that lead, they're going to suffocate you.
Yeah.
So the Blackhawks have to avoid falling behind. One goal is not insurmountable. Two goals is not insurmountable. But if it's more than two goals, you've got a real problem on your hands. So really the best way to do it is just to get off to a good start, and get a couple of them past Jonathan Quick early, and then dictate the pace.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a game plan. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. John Weideman is with us. Can I ask you, John, about you were talking about the refs and you know how Taves would pull him aside and say, "I'm not really crazy about the call or the non call." What is your opinion of, you know, allowing a lot of stuff to go uncalled in the playoffs because it's the playoffs? How do you feel about that, John?
Well, I expect it. I mean, I don't know that it's right or wrong. I just kind of expect it because they have the rules that they have during the regular season, and they enforce them, I think, more acutely in the regular season.
Uh-huh.
Playoff time, the referees, it's kind of an understanding. It's not written anywhere. Nick, you're not going to find it written anywhere. No lawyer is going to be able to grab it and file a lawsuit against anybody because of the way the officials referee during the playoffs. Nobody's going to be able to do that. But it's kind of an unwritten rule that they're going to let the boys decide what happens instead of, you know, the ticky-tack little fouls that, you know, they could call, if they wanted to, Nick, they could call a penalty about every other minute,
sure.
Seriously. They could
sure.
fill the penalty boxes up. But I think what they try and do is when they see an offense take place that could have been called, they very discreetly will, you know, skate by the offending player and say, keep your stick down or keep your arm off that guy or, you know, you interfered with the guy on that last rush. Watch it. I'm going to get you next time.
Yeah.
And maybe they get a warning like that. I think the referees feel like they're out there. Yeah, they're out there to officiate the game. But at this point in the season, Nick, they know that they are not the show, that the players are the show. So during the playoffs, there's kind of an understanding. You guys are going to decide, you know, how this is going to end up. It's not going to be us. We're here to officiate. If we see something that's egregious and it's something that we can't not call, we're going to make that call. And there have been a couple of those calls.
Yeah.
But overall, I think the penalty minutes and the numbers have been down. I will say this. The Kings are the most penalized team in the playoffs as far as minor penalties are concerned. So they've given up the most power.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. They are the most, but you know the upside of that for the Kings is that they've been pretty good at killing them off. So, you know, it's something that the Blackhawks they need to seize on. I think in the United Center tomorrow night, you know, if they can get the Kings in a situation where they do take penalties, the Blackhawks power play on home ice is much better than the power play on the road. They've only got two power play goals on the road, and I think it's 24 or 25 attempts. Where at home they've got, I believe it, that number is eight or nine goals and fewer attempts. So, you know, if the Kings are to take penalties tomorrow night in the Blackhawks, they're in a position to where they could cash in and they would need to.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because there was that period of time in this series when the Hawks' power play and their penalty kill was awful. And when that came to... It was like watching a different team.
Remember last year the penalty kill was lights out.
Oh yeah,
and the power play was kind of like, you know, you almost felt like declining it.
Yeah.
So no, you know what? We don't need the 2 minute minor. Actually, can we get a 2 minute minor?
Right.
Can we get on the penalty kill?
Right.
No, it became a point of frustration. I know for the coaching staff, and I thought they handled it pretty well, but. Every year's playoffs is different, as are the opponents. And you look at the rosters of each team, and they're made up differently each year. It seems like teams don't stay together for very long, maybe one season. And then, you know, into the next season, you see four or five new guys. And that's kind of the trend in the National Hockey League. So to be able to say that every single year, every single playoff, your team's power play is going to decide the series. Well, you just can't predict that. I'm going to quote you and say you can't forecast that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have a strong penalty kill because you know that you are going to take some penalties and you might take them at inopportune times. And you know you've got to be able to kill those off. That can be the difference between advancing to the next round or going home. And so far, you know, the penalty kill has had its problems. At times during this series, the Kings have been pretty good on the power play against the Blackhawks. But, you know, when the rubber meets the road and they need the 2 points or they need the win, they've been able to get the wins that they need to tie this series. So it's going to be a great atmosphere tomorrow night, and I know that the special teams are going to factor into it in some way. So we'll see.
All right. John, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. John Weideman is with us. He is the voice of your Chicago Blackhawks right here on WGN. Big game tomorrow, game 7, 7 p.m. puck drop right here. In Chicago at the UC. It's going to be an exciting, exciting game. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. More with John Weideman coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Yeah. We hope to hear this song a bunch of times tomorrow night at the UC. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on Michigan Avenue here. The great John Weideman is joining us to talk about tomorrow's game and this the series and everything else. John, were you able to catch some of the Rangers and the Habs game?
A little bit of it, Nick. I didn't see as much as I want. By the way, I'm just the average John Weideman. I'm not great. I'm just average. But no, I saw a little bit of their series, and I was impressed with the way the Rangers can really get together as a team and win a hockey game. And I've been very impressed, aside from the one game, how well Henrik Lundqvist has played. I mean, he's really on a mission to win a Stanley Cup. So. Yeah. You know, if the Blackhawks are fortunate enough to win tomorrow night against the Kings, they're going to have a heck of an adversary in the Rangers. They didn't match up well with the Rangers this year. They lost both meetings. So,
right.
But that's regular season. Playoffs are a different animal, and so I guess we'd see.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually rooting for the Habs. I don't know why. I just was. So, but it's going to be a good series, whatever happens. All right, Bob is in Joliet on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Evening, Nick. How are you?
Good.
John, I want to thank you. Okay. Last year at the Stan Mikita golf outing, my son Nick was your guest. Nick was with the United States Air Force.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. Yes. Nice
and
guy.
I'd like to thank you very much for the day you gave him. In fact, the night before with Bobby Hall calling him, inviting him to the golf outing and everything else, you made those four guys just feel really great.
Well, hey, that was my pleasure. I mean, the men and women that serve our country, that's the least I can do for all they do to, you know, preserve our freedoms. So I don't mean to sound trite, but that's how I truly feel. You know, my dad was in the Navy in World War II, and, you know, he got in at the tail end of the war, but he was potentially in an area where he could have been in harm's way. And so I have a great respect for the men and women in the military. And, you know, as I said, it was my pleasure. I really enjoyed, you know, playing golf with him. I don't play golf very well, so we had a lot of laughs that day.
No, he had a great time. And, you know, he's a reservist, so he's been over four times, and he goes again in October.
Mm. That's fantastic.
They go back to over the Mideast again for another tour. But all I can say is, he has just continued to talk about that day at that golf outing and what a time him and his guy had.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call, man.
Take care.
Hey, Bob,
okay, take care.
One last thing, Bob, is your son, if he's going back over, please tell him to be safe and please get us dialed in on the internet. We'll bring him Blackhawks hockey. We love bringing it worldwide.
You know, one of the nicest things about going to the UC is when they pay tribute to two or three of the people who have served in the armed forces, and it's a great moment in the UC. It sends chills down your spine. The whole place goes crazy, and they put a spotlight on two or three soldiers, and it's a wonderful moment every time at the UC.
Yeah, it really is, Nick. And they do it pretty much in every arena around the National Hockey League, and I love the show of respect that the players will exhibit when those people's names are announced and, you know, their military rank and where they've served. You see the guys get up at the benches and they take their sticks and they drape them over the front of the boards and they rap on the boards. I mean, that's recognition that should be there. And,
absolutely.
You know,
the people that are in the building that are receiving that recognition, that's the tip of the iceberg for all of those great men and women that are serving our country and of course our neighbors in North Canada, a lot of reservists in that country as well.
Yeah. It's a great moment. I mean, there's so many wonderful moments during any given Hawks game at the UC. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, one of the special things that happens every night. So here's Johnny in Mount Prospect on WGN. Johnny.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Hey, I know you're a big Hawks fan, Nick. And, John, it's great to hear you on the radio tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time for that.
Oh, no worries.
I just wanted to say that the categories of face-offs and shots on goal, I think that the Hawks have been not quite in the victorious column. You know, but nevertheless, they've been winning these games. And I just wanted to kind of have you talk about, I think the reason for that is the great shooters on the Hawks, and especially Patrick Kane.
Kane is
a big reason for that.
He's really come to play here in the last couple of games. And, you know, the Hawks have been the beneficiary of that, as have the fans. Face-offs, and shots on goal. Well, here's what I have to say about that. The LA Kings have some excellent face-off men. Jarrett Stoll, probably their best.
Yeah.
I did some calculating on the charter on the way back from LA today. He's at 62.8% on draws in this playoff series.
Wow.
So he's a monster at the dot. And Angie Kopitar is behind him. He's at, like, I think he's like at 58-something%. And that's face-off win percentage. Jeff Carter, slightly under 50%. And then, you know, it kind of goes down from there. But as far as the Blackhawks are concerned, Jonathan Toews takes most of the draws for the team. And he leads the playoffs in face-offs wins and face-off taken. He also leads in face-off losses. But he's above 50%. And puck possession is the biggest part of the Blackhawks' attack. If you lose the face-off, it's a pretty simple formula. You have to chase the puck down, and you expend 75% of your energy to get the puck back. Once you get it back, you got 25% left to do something with it. And so, you know, it's a pretty simple formula. If you win the draw, you have the puck, and you force your opponent to come after you. And that's why the hits are so skewed. That's why the Blackhawks are always getting out hit. It's because they always have the puck. But in this series, the Kings have done a great job of keeping the puck and moving it around. The back-and-forth, wide-open games that we've seen here in the last two have really been an example of what I'm saying. So the other thing that's kind of the unknown in there is the number of block shots. And the Blackhawks have the shot-blocking leader in the playoffs in Nicklas Hjalmarsson.
Yeah.
So, you know, they pay the price if they lose the puck. They have to pay the price by either going and getting it or getting in front of the shots that come in. And they can't always do it. Sometimes the shots get through. But they know that there's a commitment involved. And so if they lose the draw, they know exactly what they have to do, and they do it.
Yeah. Johnny, thanks for the call. So, John, really looking forward to tomorrow night. I mean, it should be just an electric night at the UC tomorrow. And it's going to be so much fun.
As am I, Nick. And here's one thing to consider, okay?
Yeah.
You know, the league sends out information about the teams when they get to a game seven, and they sent us a very interesting email today, and I was looking at it on the plane. You know, what's kind of neat about our charter is that at, you know, 37,000 feet, you can get internet still. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
So there I am sitting in my seat on a computer reading this email from the league. The Kings roster has an incredible record overall, each guy, in game sevens. There are like 18 of the 23 guys, and the number might be like 19 or 20, have never lost a game seven. Marian Gaborik is 6-0 in game sevens. Justin Williams is 6-0 in game sevens, and he's got 6 goals and 6 assists for 12 points in game sevens.
Wow.
If he gets one more point, he ties the NHL record held by Doug Gilmore for points in a game seven.
Wow.
Right? And if he gets one more goal, he ties Glenn Anderson for the all-time record for most goals in game sevens. So, and then on top of that, their goalie, Jonathan Quick, 3-0 in game sevens. His goals against average is like 1.0. I think 8-2 or something like that. Save percentage, 0.957 in game seven.
Wow.
So that's what the Hawks are up against. They're up against a lot of experience in the Kings in game seven.
Well, it's going to be
Their head coach Daryl Sutter is good in game seven as well.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a
hell of a game. There's no question about it. John, I'll see you tomorrow night at the UC, man.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
That's always a pleasure. Thank you, John. John Weideman, everybody, the voice of the Chicago Blackhawks. Real quick break, and the news is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios, right overlooking Michigan Avenue here. Here until midnight tonight. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we've got our regular features, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then after 10:30, Colin and Eric will join me to review all the new movies. Right now, though, Jeff Tuchman is about to join us. So you should start calling in because it gets really busy when Jeff is here. If you have a comment, if you have a question about a movie, when something's coming out, you have a tech question, you can't think of the title of a movie, you can describe it, and we try to help you out with that too. So any of those questions that you have, now is the time to call in. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll answer all of your DVD questions. We've got some really cool stuff to give away as well, which is always what happens when Jeff is here. So call us up right now. The phone lines are open, 312-981-7200.
It's time to fire up that 16-millimeter projector.
It was available on VHS at one time.
The Nick DiGilio Show presents your international man of movie mystery.
I tell you, I'm a magnet. I'm a magnet. Nick, I don't know. It's just a video craze.
I'm assuming that maybe you should do the Howard Stern Show at some point.
Tuckman. Jeff Tuckman.
Yeah. So it's official. Jeff Tuchman stops by once a month, to answer all of your DVD, Blu-ray questions and film questions. So call up right now at 312-981-7200. We also have some cool stuff to give away, and we welcome Jeff to the show. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. Good, good, good. It's been a while since you were on. Did we skip a time?
Well, what we had was we had other activities going on at GM at the time.
Yeah, there were Cubs games and Hawks games and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, but you're here now, and we're glad that you're here. And we've got some really great stuff to give away as well, and we can answer any of your questions, DVD, movie-related. You can't think of the title of a movie, and it's driving you crazy. 312-981-7200. You should call in now because it gets pretty busy when Jeff is here every month. 312-981-7200. So the video business is booming.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and
still strong.
Yeah. Now, how are they keeping track of downloads and things like that, and people downloading movies from the internet? Is there a tracking? Because I know you can track sales of DVDs and rentals and things like that. But how do they keep track of the downloading part?
That's a great question. Netflix has become huge.
Yeah.
And they have records of how many movies are watched every day, every hour. Amazon has the same thing. Hulu has that.
Mm-hmm.
So people are using other means to get that way. Obviously, sales is easy enough to track.
Right.
Every studio does it. Every independent does it. But downloads is something that I think is difficult to track if someone does it on their own. But if you do it through any of the services, that's easy.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Netflix and I've got Hulu, I find myself watching a bunch of stuff on both of them. I think they're both pretty good services. I will say this about Hulu though, Hulu Plus. You pay $8 a month, just like Netflix. They still have commercials on Hulu.
Yes, they do.
And that's kind of aggravating. You know what I mean? I'm like, wait a minute, I'm paying for this service. I watch a lot of SNL, old episodes of SNL, and I'm watching SNL, and all of a sudden a commercial comes on, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm paying I'm paying, you know, for this service. Why am I being subjected to commercials? I don't know. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, you know, it's similar to satellite radio. The whole idea of satellite radio is to be free and everything else. But you can get some stations that have commercials,
yeah,
even on satellite. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you pay for a service like Hulu. Imagine if Netflix had commercials.
Yeah.
It'd be terrible.
Yeah. It's aggravating. It really is. But yeah, I mean, everybody is streaming and everybody's watching their stuff on their devices. And it's so crazy how people watch television and watch movies now. I never would have like predicted this 10 years ago, even. You know, the way that people watch their television and things like that. I mean, you know, I've got an entire season of Hannibal on my DVR at home. I haven't watched yet. The entire season. I got all the 13 episodes. I'm going to do it on a weekend. I'm just going to sit and watch the entire season in one weekend. And, you know, that's really pretty incredible that we can do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to watch a whole season in one day.
Well, who would think that you could go to a machine and for $1 get your pick of one of 50 titles for a dollar? And these machines are outside of many, many,
yeah,
establishments,
yeah,
all over the place. And nationwide, Redbox, their videos are viewed by over 60 million people,
yeah,
every month.
That's crazy. All right, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you can't think of the title of a movie and it's driving you crazy, if you got a question about a DVD or when something's going to be released, Blu-ray, any of that stuff, that's what Jeff is here to talk about. 312-981-7200. Now, Jeff always comes bearing gifts. Jeff, what are we giving away this month?
Well, I was thinking about this last week, Nick, that you know, last Sunday was Memorial Day.
That's right, yep.
And so thinking about that, I wanted to get a couple films that represent really the best, of, in my opinion, of World War II. And so we have a double feature from Turner Classic Home Video. We've done that hundreds of times, I think, over the years.
Yeah.
And the two really good movies I liked a lot, Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge. Really excellent films, well made. The acting was great. And these movies I think a lot of people may have forgotten about, and I wanted to remind them.
Battle Cry and the Battle of the Bulge, it's a double feature, and it's from Turner Classic Movies. And there you go, Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge, in honor of last week being Memorial Day. And we'll give those away. Well, now here's what we're going to do. We always throw out a trivia question, and we've got three of these double features available that we're going to be giving away. And basically what we do is we'll throw out a trivia question, first person through on the line and answers it correctly wins the double feature, Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. Why don't we take a quick break, Jeff? And then when we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls at 312-981-7200, and we'll start giving some stuff away. So, Jeff Tuckman, hang on for a second. We'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. Sunday on WGN-TV, it's Cubs in the afternoon. Watch Len and JD call the action as the Cubs battle the Brewers in Milwaukee. It all starts Sunday on 12:30 on WGN-TV. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on a Saturday evening, here until midnight. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we'll have all our regular features, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the Gale Street Inn. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies. Then at 10:30, Colin and Eric will join me for our movie reviews. But right now, Jeff Tuckman is with us, and the phone number is 312-981-7200 for your DVD, Blu-ray questions. If you can't think of the title of a movie and you need some help with that, we can help you out with that. If I don't know it, Jeff doesn't know it, I'm sure that somebody in the audience will. So call us now at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, Jeff.
Great to be here.
All right. Well, why don't we throw out our first trivia question? And this is for a copy of the double feature Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge. Go ahead.
Battle Cry was directed by Hollywood legend Raoul Walsh. He was one of the founding members of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Science. Great director. He was very close to actor Errol Flynn, and in fact, it was a pallbearer at his funeral. Walsh directed Flynn in 7 films. Give us the names of at least 5 of them.
Okay. So give us the names of five movies that Raoul Walsh directed starring Errol Flynn. And you can call us on the contest line, 312-591-7000. Five of those seven movies have to be named from director Raoul Walsh and actor Errol Flynn. And first person through on our contest line at 312-591-7000 will win a double feature copy of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge. Okay, let's help some people out on the regular phone lines. Here is Danny on WGN. Hi, Danny.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. I'm 50 years old, and when I was a little boy, I mean little, like 6, 7 years old, there was a movie about these monsters. I believe it was on an island, and it was, the army was involved, and they would kind of slowly creep around, almost like turtles. And every now and then, they would split in half and become two of them. And when they split in half, it looked like chicken noodle soup. And I can't remember what the hell the name of that movie was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was weird.
I'm sure I've seen it. If it's a giant monster movie, I've seen it.
They weren't giant. They were like Galapagos turtles.
Oh, okay, so they were like
tortoises.
Okay, so they were like tortoise-sized.
Yeah, so and they moved like, slow, okay. Right. And they were on an island, and they would slowly creep around, and I can't remember anything other than that they would split in half.
All right, and it looked like chicken noodle soup.
It looked like chicken noodle soup, right.
All right, well, we'll leave that out. Dan, leave your radio on, okay? Maybe somebody will know the answer to that. Sounds like a movie that I'd enjoy, though. I can tell you that much. Yeah. All right, Danny, thanks, man.
6 or 7, I did enjoy it.
Yeah, all right, man, thank you.
Thanks,
all right,
thanks,
if anybody can help out, it's like these creatures that look like turtles, they split in half, and when they became two, they split in half, and they look like chicken noodle soup.
Well, Nick, you know, this show, you know you're going to get weird questions like that.
Well,
so.
You know, I mean, it's my listeners. What can I tell you? and I love the – I mean, they're not – according to Danny, they weren't giant turtles. They were just like regular-sized.
That moves slow.
Yeah. Speaking of giant creatures, have you seen the new Godzilla?
Unfortunately, I haven't, but I know you love it, and
it's awesome.
Yeah, I heard they really did a great job.
Oh man, it's the best Godzilla movie since the first one, and there's no question about it. It's phenomenal. I loved it.
I think there's been 30 of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there have been 30 Godzilla movies. Although, you know, I don't really want to count that Matthew Broderick piece of crap that came out in 1998, which almost, you know, completely single-handedly ended Godzilla. Such a terrible movie. We have a winner? We have a winner. All right, let's repeat the question.
A Battle Cry was directed by Hollywood legend Raoul Walsh. He was one of the founding members of the Academy of Motion Pictures and Arts and Science. He was very close to actor Errol Flynn, was a pallbearer at his funeral. He directed Flynn in 7 films. Give us the name of 5 of them.
And here's Julie on WGN. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right. So give us 5 of those movies.
Okay. Gentleman Jim, Silver River, Northern Pursuit, Uncertain Glory, and Objective Burma.
You got it.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Those are the 5. Julie, congratulations. You got yourself a Turner Classic Movies double feature of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening. Hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. There you go. There's Julie. She's our first winner of the night.
Yeah, she did mention one of my favorite Errol Flynn films, They Died With Their Boots On.
Yeah, that's a classic.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, classic. Great stuff. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Sharon on WGN. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Jeff.
How you doing?
I'm calling because I have a question. My long-suffering portable DVD player finally bit the dust today, and I'm in need of a recommendation for a good portable Blu-ray machine. Do either one of you have one?
Well, there are many available out there, and you know Nick has talked about this for years. The beauty of Blu-ray machines is that you can play regular DVDs on it.
You don't have to. People need to know that so they don't think they have to replace their DVDs.
Right. I Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, it's important to know that, because I remember when there was the switch from VHS to DVD, everybody was like, well, now I got to replace all my movies. But you don't have to do that. If you get a Blu-ray player, you can play regular DVDs in it.
Yeah, and Sharon, there are many stores that sell it. I would say your best bet is to tomorrow be a beautiful day outside. Pick a store in your neighborhood. You're going to find it, and there's a wide variety available. There isn't one I can recommend over the other because the quality on the portables are about the same out there.
Here's the thing. I'm completely blind. I don't even own a TV, and I listen to my DVD. So, you know, visual is not a quality, which oddly enough, I'm looking for a DVD. I'm looking for a Blu-ray, which is excellent, you know, visual quality. But so.
Well, they can help you out with no problem at all, because the one thing about Blu-ray is the sound is magnificent. And, you know, they've improved the sound even on a lot of older films. And so even with that, the stores can help you because they're all hooked up to these, you know, a lot of speakers and really good sound system, and you'll be able to hear it all.
Yeah, and they're really affordable now, Sharon. I remember when the Blu-ray players first came out, they were really expensive, but now you can get one for like $50.
Oh, great.
Easily,
yeah.
All right, Sharon, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, okay. Take care.
Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Right, bye. 312-981-7200 if you have a question for Jeff. We have two more copies of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge to give away when we ask some more trivia questions. That'll be coming up. But if you have a question for Jeff and you need some help, it's 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break here with the news. We come back more with Jeff Tuckman right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio. That's me. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios here until midnight. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we will have our regular features, Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. And then at 10:30, Colin and Eric will join me for our movie reviews. Right now, Jeff Tuckman is here, and we've got some questions to answer at 312-981-7200 if you want to join us. And Jeff joins us every month and always brings presents here to give out. And today we've got a double feature of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge to give away. We got two more copies. Why don't we throw out another trivia question there, Jeff, so we can get another one out to a listener.
Okay, Henry Fonda stars in the Battle of the Bulge. He was a terrific actor, and in 1999 was named the sixth greatest male star of all time by the American Film Institute. Henry Fonda appeared in 106 films.
Wow.
And was nominated 3 times for Academy Awards, and he won once. Tell us the names of the films, and which one did he win the Best Actor for?
Okay, he was nominated 3 times. Which movies was he nominated for, and which one did he win? Henry Fonda. 312-591-7000. That's the contest line. 312-591-7000. First person through who can name those movies will win the double feature of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge. All right, let's go back to the phones. This is Nick on WGN. Hi, Nick.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
Quick, this movie, I can't think of the name of it, but it's post 9/11, shot like the Blair Witch. It's like a mockumentary about a guy. He went to Afghanistan wanting to know more about the Taliban, but you find out at the end, his girlfriend was on one of the planes that hit the towers, and he just wanted to shoot the Taliban guy.
Mm.
And I cannot remember the name of the movie. I watched it so long ago, and I have to admit I had a couple. But I can't remember the name of it.
Wow.
It's driving me nuts, and it's such a good movie.
I don't think I've seen it. Have you seen that, Ted?
No,
I haven't. That one? I don't know. We'll leave it out there, Nick. Keep your radio on. I've never seen it, but it sounds interesting. And it's from a few years ago, you think?
Yeah, but definitely after 2001. Honestly.
Well, clearly, yeah.
It was such a good movie. I love that shooting Blair Witch style because, you know, you pretend like it's real.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep it out there. All right, Nick. Thanks, man.
All right, bro. Later.
Take care. All right. I've never – wow, it sounds interesting, though.
It really does.
Yeah. Wow. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I believe we do actually now have a winner And here he is. This is John in Elmhurst on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, guys.
All right.
All right. I got 12 Angry Men, the Giraffe, and On Golden Pond, for which he won the Oscar.
That's right.
Yep, there you go. Those are the ones. 12 Angry Men, Grapes of Wrath, and he won for On Golden Pond. Congratulations, John. You got yourself a copy of Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge, okay?
Oh, thanks so much.
Sure, man. Hang on a second. There's John. He is our next winner. We've got one more copy to give away, and we will do that in just a little bit. So 312, if you have a question for Jeff, please do call us right now, 312-981-7200. And here is Joanne on WGN. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. First of all, go Hawks.
Yeah.
I am a new grandmother, and I want to kind of build a Disney library of DVDs for my granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a lot of them that you can't go into a store at this point and buy, such as I just paid probably $45 on, I think, Amazon for Beauty and the Beast for her. So is there a place where I can go online where I can see when they're going to let some of these become available from the vault that aren't available right now?
Well, I tell you, Joanne, first of all, you know, Disney, the classic movies, Disney has their own store, and they sell a lot of the titles at their own store. There's also plenty of stores around Chicago that actually separate the Disney classics. And what happens is that you can get it on regular DVD, and they have a lot of classics available on Blu-ray also. And the beauty of it is that you'll be keeping this in your collection for many, many years to come. And so the majority of the classics are available.
Yeah, you know, Disney has a pretty substantial website, and they update it pretty frequently. So I think if you just go to the Disney website and click onto the DVD section, I'm pretty sure that they've got a full list of what's available and what isn't. Congratulations, by the way, Joanne.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And of course I'm willing to pay for things that aren't out there right now, just so that we have them.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, the Beauty and the Beast one on Blu-ray is not available at the store, and so I had to, you know, to go on a secondary market to be able to find it.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hoping that maybe there was a place where we could go where there was a date, you know, a future date where maybe they were going to be releasing some of these, you know, because of course they do them in these other, you know, golden anniversaries or something like that, where if I wait, you know, a year where I can be able to get something in that collection.
Well, here's the deal. You know, Eric Childress, who reviews movies with me on Saturday nights, he'll be joining us in a little bit. He actually on the E-Film Critic website, he actually does a really great job of compiling a list of movies that are going to be released. I mean, it's a pretty massive list. So you can just look at the titles on that. So if you just go to efilmcritic.com, there's a great preview page of movies that'll be coming out, and that includes Disney.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. Oh, that's really good to know. That's great to know. So
okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
Okay, thank
bye.
You.
Does anybody know, let's see, so we've got that movie with the creepy turtle creatures that split in half.
And turned into chicken soup.
Chicken noodle soup. Do you know what it is, Dan?
Yeah, a bunch of people are checking in on text here saying it's called Island of Terror. It's from 1966, starring Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing?
Yeah.
That's my hero.
They reproduce asexually every few hours by splitting in half and spilling out their glowing spaghetti-like innards.
There you go. What's it called again?
Island of Terror.
How do I not know this movie? Peter Cushing is like my childhood hero.
Oh, he's great.
I loved Peter Cushing.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Island of Terror. There you go. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Yeah. You know, it's really funny because when I was a kid, I loved Peter Cushing. He was honest to God, he was my hero. I loved him. And I remember, you know, like most people wanted to be like astronauts and when I was a kid. They wanted to be like astronauts, or you wanted to go play cowboys and Indians. I wanted to be Dr. Van Helsing.
Oh, yes.
When I saw Horror of Dracula, the first time I saw Horror of Dracula, Peter Cushing became my hero. And I thought he was the coolest. I thought he was the best.
Well, Peter Cushing was great, and Christopher Lee. In fact, one of my, I think one of the things I really, really enjoyed, well, obviously, I've been in the video business for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And I've met just about anybody I wanted to meet in Hollywood, whatever. But one of the thrills, really, was Christopher Lee.
Oh, you met Christopher Lee?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. Tall guy.
Oh, he's huge. Yeah. Did you know that it's really unbelievable, but May 26th is Peter Cushing's birthday. May 27th is Christopher Lee and Vincent Price's birthday. So those three guys were born 2 days apart. I mean, that's like the holy trinity of horror actors right there.
when I think of Cushing and Lee, I think about the Hammer horror.
Oh, the Hammer horror movies, man.
They were great.
They changed my life.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was watching the Universal horror movies when I was a little kid. I grew up on those, loved them. You know, the classic Universal horror movies, Wolfman, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Dracula.
The Mummy,
all that stuff. Loved them. And then when I saw the Hammer movies, you know, they used the same characters, but they were in color, and the music was like crazy and over the top, and there were boobs and blood, and I was like, man, this is cool. And the Hammer movies are still, you know, real soft spot in my heart for the Hammer.
Nick, can I throw in, if you were looking for a really, well, not really obscure, but a movie you haven't seen in a while, a horror flick, if you can call it that? The Tingler was on TV today.
Yeah,
Vincent Price.
That is one of those movies that William Castle made that movie, and that was one of the deals where he actually wired the seats in the theater.
Yes, he did.
So that when the Tingler appeared, you would get shocked, like the people in the theater would get shocked. Certain seats would get shocked. And that was one of the gimmicks that William Castle was responsible for. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you got a question, we have some lines open. Jeff, why don't we throw out the last trivia question, and then we'll take a couple of more calls here, and then you can tell us upcoming titles. So here we go.
Robert Shaw was an excellent actor who was known for playing villains. Not only could he act, Shaw was an accomplished writer of novels, plays, and screenplays. He appeared in 45 films and was nominated for an Academy Award for A Man for All Seasons. Terrific film. Later in his career, he gained new popularity for his role in a Steven Spielberg film. What is the name of the film?
If you don't know this, I will slap you. 312-591-7000. 312-591-7000. Robert Shaw in a Steven Spielberg movie. What's that movie? You wanted to make it a little tough, huh, Jeff?
No.
All right, we'll take a quick break here. 312-591-7000 is the contest line. If you have a question for Jeff and we can help you out with it, it's 312-981-7200, and Jeff will give us a preview of upcoming titles as well. All right, take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios here overlooking Pioneer Court on Michigan Avenue here. Here until midnight after 10 o'clock, it's Drunks in the News brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We got Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spies. Then after 10:30, Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com join me to do our weekly movie reviews. We're here till midnight. Right now, though, Jeff Tuckman is here, and we threw out a trivia question. Jeff, what was it?
Robert Shaw was an excellent actor. He usually played villains, but he was great in everything. In fact, he was nominated for an Academy Award for A Man for All Seasons. But later in his career, he gained new popularity in a role in a Steven Spielberg film. What is the name of the film?
Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Me from way back when.
Years
ago.
What's the name of the
movie? I've been listening to you. Oh
sure.
Jaws.
Jaws, yes, of course. That was a tough question, wasn't it, Paula?
I, I couldn't possibly get it. You know what else he was good in? That Sunday movie? I can't remember the whole name.
Black Sunday.
Black Sunday. That was a good one.
You know, the thing about him and Jaws is everybody obviously remembers the Indianapolis monologue, the USS Indianapolis monologue that he has. It's one of the greatest monologues in movie history. John Milius wrote it, uncredited. And the take that's in the movie, Shaw was hammered. Shaw was a big drinker. He was Robert Shaw could put it away, and he was hammered. And that take that you see in the movie of him delivering that monologue, he's loaded. I mean, he's completely loaded. And when Spielberg yelled cut after that take, he passed out right on the table. So next time you watch that movie, Paula, next time you see him delivering that that monologue, realize that he is about a minute and a half away from passing out.
My word.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'll tell my brother. I got these for my brother. He likes the war movie.
Battle Cry and Battle of the Bulge, a couple of great ones. Okay, hold on, Paula. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. There you go. Paul is our winner. And every week, or every month, Jeff brings some stuff in. All right, what do we got coming up? What are we looking forward to?
A couple of neat titles, Nick, that I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie, and I cannot wait for the sequel.
Yes.
I'm so excited. That movie really blindsided me, How to Train Your Dragon, because, you know, I went, and I was like, it'll be fine. And I adore that movie. I just think it's beautiful, and it's funny, and it's awesome. And, you know, everybody was talking about, you know, at that time it was about a year after Avatar came out. And everybody was talking about all the flight sequences in Avatar. The flight sequences in the action sequences in How to Train Your Dragon are 50,000 times better than anything in Avatar. I love that movie. Is there a special edition coming out?
Well, the Blu-ray has a bunch
of... Oh, the Blu-ray. Oh,
the
yeah.
Blu-ray has a bunch of extra features on
cool.
it. Yeah, I really like that.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, and you know what's neat about it, too? You got some deleted scenes, which I like in there. Also this week, Gambit is out with... when Nick turns silence, that's what...
I haven't seen it. I mean, I've seen the original, but I have not seen the remake.
Well, Colin Firth and Alan Rickman are in there, and Cameron mm-hmm. Diaz.
Coen Brothers wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. But a title thing that a lot of twists and turns, little off the wall comedy in that. But one of my favorite groups, obviously the Beatles, my favorite group, growing up was Dave Clark Five.
Sure.
A lot of people, you know, say they helped the whole British invasion. But finding Dave Clark Five titles have been difficult for everybody and even videos.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a collection called Dave Clark Five Glad All Over, which was the
sure,
first hit.
Their biggest hit, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest hit. And it's like it's really, really good because a lot of the people like Paul McCartney, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, Stevie Wonder love a Dave Clark Five, along with a lot of us, about a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has 4 hours of performances, 2 hours of extra interviews. I mean, Paul McCartney loved them. As an example, and he has great taste. Another one I wanted to mention out this week is Pioneers of Television. Really great PBS series. And it's like season 4, and includes the new episodes. Like one is called Stand Up to Sitcom. You know, a lot of stand-up comedians went on to have their own shows.
Yeah.
Obviously, Seinfeld being the most successful.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Raymond, Roseanne. And then they have another thing, Acting Funny, which takes Robin Williams behind the scenes. Doctors and Nurses, you know, obviously a lot of shows from George Clooney in ER to Richard Chamberlain and Dr. Kildare, Anthony Edwards, Ed Begley, you know, it's really, really neat. And then the last one I really liked a lot is Breaking Barriers. Shows like I Love Lucy that broke a lot of barriers. You know, Julia broke barriers. Bill Cosby did.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good series on that. I want to mention some of the titles coming out in the future. In June, the biggest hit is Lego Movie, which surprised a lot of people.
Great movie.
Really, really neat. 300 Rise of the Empire comes out. Lone Survivor did really, really good. The $125 million at the box office.
Yeah.
Winter's Tale, one that I liked with Colin Farrell. It was a small movie. It didn't do that well, but I liked it a lot. In July, you've got movies like Rio 2, another one I think you liked. Noah, which I think surprised a lot
Noah
of people.
Noah was a good movie.
It really is. It really did. It did over $100 million
really
in the box
good
office. Heaven is for Real, another movie that I thought was pretty good. I think the one that I know you wanted to see is Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I know you look
at well, I've seen it.
Yeah, I know.
No, and there's a lot to see.
A lot.
Scarlett Johansson.
And in August, two titles I liked a lot. Divergent, I thought was really, really good. And a movie, the small little movie called The Railway Man that not a lot of people saw.
Yeah, it came and went.
Yeah, but this is the movie that what video business is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Little movies that you're discovering for the first time.
Right. All right. Well, if people had questions that they didn't get answered tonight, you have an email address?
Yes. You can write me at yourmediaman@AT&T.net.
Yourmediaman@AT&T.net. All right, Jeff, thanks a lot, man. It's always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next month.
Take care, Nick.
All right, we'll take a quick break here. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios here on Michigan Avenue. If you want to come by and say hi, the phone number is 312-981-7200, and you can send your text to 24720. You can also check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. Coming up at 10:30, it's our movie review segment that we do every week. Colin and Eric from efilmcritic.com join me, and we will review all the new movies that's coming up. And we'll also review the new on-demand thing, movies that are available as well. So we'll do all that coming up. But right now, though, we've got some regular features that we're going to be doing. And we got Drunks, the News, which is, of course, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. And I want to thank George and everybody at the Gale Street Inn for just generally being awesome and for sponsoring Drunks in the News. So, we'll have a good time doing that, and let's actually start it up.
I want bourbon, want Scotch,
that's right.
Want beer.
So this is when we gather up all the stupid drunk stories of stupid drunk people doing stupid and drunk stuff, read them, and we vote. And we call it Drunks in the News. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Uh-oh, someone messed with your echo.
Hello. Hello. Nope. Wait a minute. Maybe. Hold on. Oh. Well.
Not official until you do the echo.
Well, it's not going to happen.
Oh, no.
Well, it's not going to happen. It's supposed to be switched onto that. That you put that on B.
Yeah.
And then you put that here. And then you press the button, and it's supposed to be echo, and it isn't.
Uh-oh.
So.
Just do it manually.
Do it manually?
Drunks.
Yeah, right.
Well, I do have that stupid box that I had to use.
It's not stupid. That saved you for over a year.
Well, that was Aubrey.
Yeah.
Aubrey bought that for me, but he bought this weird little speaker that I would have to put up against the mic and speak into like it was a...
it was different
megaphone.
Voice things
like
in it.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
And
well,
it
we don't have Drunks in the News. We don't have Drunks in the News. I don't know if I'm supposed to do something else. It's normally just that one button, and that does it. But it doesn't seem to be working. Let's try this. Hello. Nope. Well, we don't have the echo, so there you go. But
just not going to be the same.
We do have Drunks in the News, so here we go.
Okay.
And by the way, if you want to be a part of Drunks in the News, it's really easy to do. Find the link to a funny drunk story and send it to Dan Long, and that's dlong@wgnradio.com. D-L-O-N-G, dlong@wgnradio.com. Say, hey, I'd like to read this on the air. Dan will contact you. We'll record it. You'll get on the air. Not only will you be a part of Drunks in the News, you'll also get yourself a $25 gift card to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Billy B. in Deerfield is our drunk reader tonight, so we'll get to that in a second. But let's do this. Drunk number one. Drunk number one. An Iowa woman who admitted guzzling two bottles of Black Velvet whiskey. Oh, my God. Oh, that stuff is terrible. Guzzling two bottles of Black Velvet whiskey had a blood alcohol content that was so high, she could have been playing 99 bottles of beer on the wall. Patricia Hunley was charged with misdemeanor public intoxication after she allegedly posted a blood alcohol level of, oh my God, 0.43, and she peed on herself at an Iowa City gas station. Police responded to the scene after receiving a report that the 30-year-old was intoxicated and refused to leave the station's convenience store. When asked to leave, she replied, "On my mama's life, I will beat your blank." When police arrived, Hunley was covered in urine and had slurred speech and poor balance. She was leaning against the car to keep herself up. Hunley told police she drank two bottles of Black Velvet whiskey and urinated on herself for a second time after being taken into custody. The blood alcohol content of 0.439 that Hunley allegedly posted during this incident was actually lower than the 0.462 she allegedly registered during an August incident. The legal limit to operate a motor vehicle is 0.08. I'm outdoors, you know. Can good I stay with you, Lord.
Is that stuff rot gut, basically?
It's terrible.
Ugh.
It's just terrible. Drunk number two. Drunk number two. McDonald's customers on Monday night demand. No, two drunken and apparently angry McDonald's customers on Monday night demanded free food, threatened employees, and then trashed the restaurant. Malik Mitchell, 35, of Brooklyn, New York, and Malcolm Mitchell, 37, of Manhattan, New York, were arrested after they allegedly threatened to injure employees of the McDonald's. They demanded free food from the fast food restaurant. When employees refused, the pair threw a chair over the counter, said Captain Stanley Zahn. The food-fueled rampage damaged the cash register, windows, and a large Ronald McDonald figure in the restaurant. The two men were extremely intoxicated at the time. Police received a call at around 10 o'clock on Monday reporting unruly customers. When the police arrived, the two men tried to run away. After a brief chase, police apprehended the pair. Malik Mitchell allegedly kicked and punched one of the officers, and he was later treated for minor injuries. Both men were charged with robbery, criminal mischief, and making terrorist threats. Malik Mitchell, who is being held in jail in lieu of $50,000 bail, was also charged with assaulting an officer. Bail was set at $35,000 for Malcolm Mitchell. A spokesman for McDonald's declined to comment on the incident. Zahn said that most of the damage of the restaurant has yet to be assessed. Fantastic mugshots, too, these guys took.
Yeah.
Drunk number three! Drunk number three! An intoxicated Florida woman out celebrating her 52nd birthday allegedly dumped her 73-year-old mother out of the wheelchair. She was telling her for 52 years of blank. Patricia Taverner's mother was found by a police officer lying in the fetal position in the street after Friday's incident outside of Tavares Restaurant, according to an arrest report. The witness told police they saw the elderly woman, who said she had been living with Taverner following her hip surgery, fell and hit the cement first. She went on to fight with her sister with a camera, breaking the lens, according to the restaurant employees, into a statement. When officers arrived, they reported finding the woman's elderly mother, identified as Karen Judge, injured in the street. She was arrested and charged with aggravated battery on a person over 65, which is a felony. She was also charged with misdemeanor battery for hitting her sister with the camera. She was booked at Lake County Jail before released on Saturday on $20,500 bail. Drunk number four. Drunk number four. Drunk number four is our friend Billy B. in Deerfield. Let's hear from Billy B.
This is Billy B. for Drunks in the News. Dateline, Utah. Attendees at a wedding at a Salt Lake City church on Saturday were shocked to spot a 60-year-old woman and a 56-year-old man engaging in a sex act on the church lawn. A Salt Lake City Police Department's officer was summoned to Sacred Heart Catholic Church at around 6 p.m. by a wedding guest who ran into the road to stop a passing police cruiser being driven by Officer Rich Stone. Stone then approached Sandra Cruiser and Wilson Benelli, who were laying on the church lawn. I walked over to the couple, and I physically saw the sex act, Stone reported. Specifically, he noted, Benelli had his tongue and finger inside, well, you get the picture. The Cruzy Benelli tryst was viewed by, among others, four children in the wedding party, according to the police report. When Stone confronted the couple, they initially ignored orders to stop having sex. Cruiser and Benelli, who were not invited to the nuptials, eventually had to be pried apart by Stone. Cruiser and Benelli were arrested for gross lewdness and public intoxication, Benelli also being charged with criminal trespass. Both remain locked up in jail awaiting bail. Benelli has been booked 102 times into the Salt Lake lockup, while Cruiser has been there on 15 separate occasions.
Wow. Wow, man. I don't even know what to say about that. All right, I think we need to vote. But, see, now Aubrey came down here.
We gonna get echo?
I don't know. See, it's supposed to be up here. It's this thing, and it's, if it's on B, that's what I'm supposed to do. Is that it?
Engineering 101, ladies and gentlemen.
Nah.
How to start an echo?
Hello? No? No?
This See? Is exciting radio.
Nope.
Nothing?
Nope.
Oh.
It's not gonna happen. Thanks, Aubrey.
It's a conspiracy.
All right, we got to vote. We got the two drunk idiots at the McDonald's who trashed the place. We've got the insane woman from Florida who dumped her mother out of a wheelchair. We've got the two people drunk and having sex on a church lawn, and then we have the Iowa woman who drank two bottles of black velvet whiskey. All right, we have to vote. Dan, who are you going for, Dan?
I have to go. Just the sheer scientific oddity that is the woman that drank the two black velvet whiskey bottles and had the blood alcohol level of, was it 4.43 something?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. I mean, the fact that she's still alive.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is unbelievable.
Yeah, that she even has any innards.
Yeah.
You know, that it didn't just go straight through. Seriously. That's why I asked you how bad the stuff was.
Oh, it's terrible.
God.
I mean, the fact that they actually put the word whiskey on the bottle is false advertising, as far as I'm concerned.
More like lighter fluid.
The stuff is terrible.
Oh God, I was going with that anyway too.
All right. Yeah, I'm going with that one too. She was clearly the drunk.
Is there
of the
a
week.
Picture of her?
No.
Oh, darn.
Unfortunately, no. My guess is she wouldn't look very good. That would be my guess. So, all right. Well, there you go. And now, Billy B, you get yourself a. $25 gift certificate to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, okay? That's right. Same bat time, same bat channel next week for Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Oh, brother. All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, it's time for Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. And after 10:30, Colin and Eric will join me, and we will do our weekly movie reviews. Test your wit, prove your smarts, and find new facts. Download Tribune Trivia for free and challenge your friends to the top of the leaderboard. New categories added. Download the free app now at TribuneTrivia.com. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb.
Context.
Ah, yes. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios here on a Saturday night, and we do Straight Out of Context every week. And let's see, Dan, how many we got?
7 this week.
Okay, well, here's how it works. What you do is you listen to this radio station 24/7. When anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to dlong@wgnradio.com. That's D-L-O-N-G, dlong@wgnradio.com. Anytime somebody says something, pull it out of context, sounds dirty, we'll give you some examples. We got 7 of them. All right, let's go.
All right, first up from Kristen Decker, we welcome John Williams back to the WGN family.
Didn't take long.
Guess what? I can lick your cheese.
Welcome back, John. All right.
All right. Again, John Williams.
So someone sucked your ice cube.
Is it all Decker doing that?
Oh, yeah. One more from Decker here. We have Marianne Murciano.
I like that. Hot dog hopping.
Okay.
All right. Hawk of May sent me this one. It's Bill Leff.
I can't do that. My tongue is way too big for my mouth, Wendy. It would be messy.
Okay, I don't even know if that was out of context. Okay, next.
Dirty Dave sent me this one.
Christine started doing her grandmother, and then I started doing her young grandson, Dickie.
That was Dick Orkin on Bill and Wendy's show.
Oh, God. All right, next.
Next from Wild Bill, Patty Vasquez.
Did you see him whip that thing out earlier?
Okay, and this is the last one?
Yeah, finally from Lisa in Kenosha, Dave Ennett.
I just caught my tip.
Okay, all right, Dave, there you go, man. All right.
Spies.
Hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies. 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 Like us.
Yeah, all right. Now, the Nick D Show Spies. This is when you listen 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or talks about the show in any capacity, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to dlong@wgnradio.com. All right?
All right. Three? Three this week.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, first up from Peter in Decatur, it's Dean Richards.
You know, some of the other reviews that have come out that I've read on the page in which people just hated it, couldn't stand it. And last night I heard Nick DiGilio talking about the movie. I believe Nick said it was the best movie of the year so far, which I wouldn't go that far. But, you know, Nick is on one extreme. Some of the other people on Facebook are at the other. I'm somewhere in the middle, I guess.
Referring to Godzilla.
Oh, well, it is the best movie of the year. I saw it again today. I loved it, man. It kicks ass. Okay, next.
Next from Wild Bill, it's Dan Dibert.
Joining us in the studio here, Elliot Serrano, who, by the way, has the, out of any of us, I'm looking around the room, nobody has the playoff beard going except for you, Elliot.
Yeah, it's in full form right now. It's been going for almost 40 days now.
Yeah. You know who's got a pretty good beard going? Is Nick DiGilio. Have you seen his?
No, Nick does his show from a different studio, so I never
get
to see him.
It's incredible. He actually updates his beard on Facebook just about every day. Day certain, day so-and-so. So, yeah, he's got a pretty good beard going.
Yeah, I'll check that out. I tried to do the
Bill Cerrone's in there, too.
Yeah, that was Bill. I recognize Bill. Yeah, we're on day 45, I think.
Yeah.
Tomorrow will be 46.
Yeah.
So when I click the picture, it'll be day 46. And I got to tell you, it's driving me nuts. It's the hairs in my mouth. It's itchy. Oh, man. All right, next one.
Yeah, finally, another one from Wild Bill, Patty Vasquez.
What I did not know that I learned from Cochrane is that the 80-year-old women love Nick DiGilio. So that was a fun
80-year-old women love Nick.
80-year-old women. Nick says it's because of all of his talk about, you know, scary movies and going out drinking, and that they all want to, what's wrong with you? I'll take care of you.
Oh, they want to nurture him.
Yes.
So Nick D is hot in the octogenarian circles, huh?
Sweet.
Nice.
And out of the nursing homes.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see him tonight. I'm going to give him you-know-what about that.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. The older listener, the older female listenership, they love me. They do. They love me. And I think it's just because they want to take care of me. I think that's what it is.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They just like, you're a sick little jerk.
A nurturing thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, there you go. That's Nick D Show Spies. Let's wrap it up.
Spies. Like us. Like us. Like us. Like us. Spies. Like us. Hey! Spies. Like us. Spies Like Us makes me laugh so hard.
There you go. All right. You know how that works. So any of these things, straight out of context, you keep listening. When somebody says something, you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, dlong@wgnradio.com. And if anybody has mentioned me or the show in any capacity, jot down the day, the time, and who said it, and send it to dlong@wgnradio.com. Quick break here. We got the news coming up, and then right after the news, Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me live, and we'll review all the new movies right here on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios right here on WGN on overlooking Michigan Avenue here. And the lovely Amy Guth will be in for Red Eye Remix at midnight. And we will answer any of your movie questions. If you want to call in to review a movie and tell us what you saw, you can call up at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, any movie question or movie comments. And we've got actually, we're going to talk about some movies that came out last week. We were not on last week. So we're going to catch up on some of those movies as well. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me and every week in order to review the movies, and let's do it. Yeah, it is movie review time, and we got a lot to talk about, and let's welcome Colin to the show. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Okay.
All right.
All right. Hey, I understand that my main man Tom Cruise showed up at a screening of Edge of Tomorrow.
He most certainly did.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool, actually.
Yeah. And I think that movie looks good.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's
quite good.
Not to, like, give our review away, but, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm a fan of Doug Liman stuff. I wasn't crazy about Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but.
Jumper?
I like Jumper.
Really?
Yeah, didn't I?
Nobody likes Jumper. So. Hayden Christensen?
Oh, no, that sucked.
There you go.
You know what I was thinking of with that number four? Who did I Am Number Four?
Better.
I like that movie.
Yeah, I know that's the one you like.
That's the one I liked. But see, it's so distinctive, I didn't even know the title. That's how that's how important it is. A couple of big ones came out last week. I will say this, since I did not have to come on Saturday and review a movie, I chose not to see the new Adam Sandler film. How about that?
Yep.
I said,
me neither.
Well, I don't have to review it on Saturday, so I you know what? I'm not going to see that piece of crap.
I'd known that.
Colin, you did.
Hey, yeah, I wish I'd known that we weren't going to be on that Saturday. Yeah,
well, you didn't know?
I did not know.
I told him a little late.
You told him a little late? Oh,
yeah.
No. I'm sorry. We weren't on last week, Colin.
Try telling both of us next time, all right?
I thought I sent a group text.
I didn't get one.
Oh. Okay. All right. All right. Well, anyway, listen, Colin, you got to review it now, man. Tell us all about Blended.
Yeah. I'm not going to let this go to waste. So.
No.
Here we go. Yeah, this is your piece of crap Adam Sandler vehicle for the summer. And this time he's paired once again with Drew Barrymore. And at the start of the film, they go out on a blind date together at Hooters, and it doesn't go very well at all. And they're both single parents, and she has two obnoxious boys. He has three precocious daughters. Anyway, they have mutual friends who have set them up on this. So they go their separate ways, both assuming they'll never see each other again. Long story short, and I do mean long, it takes 40 minutes to get to this part of the story. After a series of meet-cutes and misunderstandings, both sets of families end up in Africa together at a resort where all the African characters act like buffoons and where nobody has any real interest in African culture at all because this is an Adam Sandler film. And both families are forced to share a suite together, and you can pretty much tell where it's going from here.
Oh, wackiness ensues.
Oh, so much wackiness ensues, so much, this is your typical Sandler material in that it's xenophobic, it's mean-spirited, and completely phony when it suddenly goes for the heartfelt sentiment. There are characters and situations that are just dealt with so horribly and offensively. One of Sandler's daughters has kind of a boyish look and is constantly being mistaken for a boy, even though she really doesn't look that much like a boy. She just has a little cropped hairstyle. And the way Sandler treats her is just like, you thought the parents and neighbors were bad. Sandler is pretty much the worst father in film history. all the African characters are just, there to just be idiotic, unconscionable to me. It looks like the phoniest Africa you've ever seen in a film. And I think they went to Africa. I haven't looked this up yet. I think they went to Africa to film it.
Yeah, they did.
They did. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know why they bothered, because it has no interest in Africa whatsoever. They could have just shot it in Arizona. It would have been the same movie.
There's
a lot of critics who are just kind of giving this movie not necessarily a pass, but just kind of brushing it off and saying, well, it's not quite as bad as the stuff he's been putting out over the last few years. Yeah, it is. In fact, this is the worst film I've seen all year so far.
Wow.
This is a huge zero. Drew Barrymore is just embarrassingly bad in it. I couldn't endure this thing. It's a full 2 hours, and it's the most unendurable 2 hours I've had at the movies this year. So
wow, man. And Dennis Dugan didn't direct this one, did he?
No, this is the director of the last one, 51st Dates and The Waterboy. So it's one of Sandler's regular guys.
Karachi, yeah, right?
Yeah, Karachi.
Yeah, Karachi. Yeah.
He also did Here Comes the Boom and Zookeeper.
Yeah.
And Wedding Singer.
Wedding Singer I liked.
Yeah.
I liked Wedding Singer.
Yeah, I like Wedding Singer too. And I actually don't think Here Comes the Boom was that bad. Zookeeper I never saw. But this was just monumental crap.
Okay.
There's a lot of people giving really bad reviews to another movie, another comedy that we're going to review later tonight. I don't think they sat through this movie.
Okay. Well, I did not sit through Blended, but we will we will definitely have an interesting conversation about this other thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now, Colin, I know that you're kind of done with comic book movies.
I am kind of done with comic book movies. I mean, I will go see the new X-Men movie, but I've sort of, like you, once I found out that we weren't reviewing movies, I was like, well, all right, I'll catch up with X-Men later, and I still haven't caught up with it, so I will eventually see it at some point.
All right. Well, Eric, why don't you tell us about X-Men?
Okay. Well, this is, believe it or not, the seventh X-Men film, and this one takes place, I guess, after all the other ones that we've seen. And in fact, it takes place sometime further in the future, where mutants have actually been hunted down and killed, and also most of the human race, thanks to these giant robot beings known as Sentinels that were designed in the 1970s to essentially hunt down mutants before they could destroy the world themselves. Everyone's got this gigantic fear of mutants. So in the future, as all the mutants are being wiped out, Professor X and Magneto have teamed up. They've got Wolverine back on their side, and they figured out a way to consciously put Wolverine back into the past, put Hugh Jackman's Logan back into his body from 1973, and to track down the young Professor X, the young Magneto, especially the young Mystique, who is responsible for, maybe indirectly responsible for causing the entire mutant race to almost be completely wiped out. So you have some time travel stuff here, but you don't have a real sense of the sort of the wacky time travel where they're going to go back and they're going to change things and, you know, one little ripple effect and you got a butterfly thing going on. No, this is the plot of this movie is actually sort of effectively simple in a way, is that, you know, we're going to go back to the past. You have to stop these things from happening and then everything should be okay in the future. More to the point, this is sort of a sequel above everything else to X-Men First Class, even though it has a number of the original X-Men on display, most notably Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. This, you know, mainly the focus is on the younger versions. James McAvoy is Professor X, Michael Fassbender is Magneto, and Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique. And of all the X-Men movies that I've seen, and I've seen them all, this is the one that feels to me the most epic, or at least the closest they've come to sort of achieving that level of epicness that they've been trying so hard to do by sort of bringing in, like, you know, 800 mutants in every single movie. In this one, by keeping it relatively simple and not sort of burdening us by introducing a whole lot of new mutants, except for a character named Quicksilver, who all the comic book fans know is going to be in the Avengers sequel, but played by a different actor. The sequence with Quicksilver in this film is extraordinary.
Yep.
It's just wonderful, wonderfully put together. It's the best sequence in the movie.
It is.
In fact, it's so good, it's very disappointing that it's the last thing you're going to see him in until apparently Aaron Johnson takes him over in the Avengers, which is really just very disconcerting. But that being said, this movie, it's paced very well. The actors are just top-notch all around. You get to just see Jennifer Lawrence kick a lot of ass in blue body paint. That's lovely. McAvoy, Jackman, Fassbender, all very good. Peter Dinklage plays the guy that created the Sentinels. So he's got a pretty decent part. This is probably my favorite of all the X-Men movies, and maybe that's not saying a lot, because I've gone sort of back and forth on a few of them, but I liked X-Men First Class, I liked the Wolverine, and I think I like this one just a bit more than First Class, because like I said, it sort of achieved that level of the epicness and the sense that the stakes were really, really high in this one, so I like it a lot.
Yeah, this movie kicks ass, man. And it's, I still, my favorite is still First Class. First Class is still, is my favorite of the series. But this is just an incredibly entertaining movie. And you mentioned the acting. I officially love James McAvoy. That's it. I love that guy. And I still haven't seen Filth yet. I gotta see Filth.
You've seen Trance, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love him.
Watch that again today.
I love him. I think the guy's awesome. And everybody in it is great. And it's really beautifully, done. It's well directed. Bryan Singer does a great job. The pacing is great. The action sequences are awesome, and there are a lot of them. The special effects are really beautifully handled. The characters are interesting. It's just a really kick-ass summer movie. I had a blast. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I went with a bunch of people last Friday to the Davis, and we all had it. We just were afterwards. We went over to the bar, and we were just like, man, that would just kick ass. Everybody I know who's seen it has loved it. And so, you know, I know, Colin, that you're kind of burnt out on the comic book movies, but this is a good one, man.
Yeah, I will see it. I will see it.
Yeah, it's you know, and I'm a fan of the X-Men movies. I didn't like Wolverine. I liked the Wolverine.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't like Origins. It was Origins, right?
Yes, X-Men Origins is awful.
Yeah, it's terrible. I didn't like the third one.
Nope.
But I liked the first two. So, you know, I'm a fan of the series, I have to say, because most of them, I liked most of them.
But I like 4 out of 7.
Okay.
I don't like the X2. I don't like X-Men United very much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I liked it.
I think the third act of that movie is unbelievably weak.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, we had to catch up with the two big ones from last week. So Blended is the worst movie that Colin has seen all year. and both Eric and I enjoyed very much X-Men Days of Future Past. It's just a really terrific movie. All right. We're going to take a quick break, you guys. When we come back, we'll cover the on-demand and then all the new movies, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, you guys, hang on a second. We got to put these guys on hold here. And, yeah, that's how it works. We'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio on the WGN. And if you have a movie question, it's 312-981-7200. More movie reviews coming up after this. Yeah, man. Yeah. Movie review time. That's what we're doing. Yeah. They're just showing the game-winning goal on TV from last night. I'm so excited about tomorrow. It's going to be ridiculous. Let's welcome Colin and Eric back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey. I'm so jacked about the game tomorrow. I can't even explain to you.
You? Really?
I'm losing my mind, man. Okay, so you know what, Colin, you did want to mention a movie that opened up last week called Ida.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay, so this is a Polish film that takes place in 1960s Poland. The title character is actually named Wanda, a woman who has been raised in a convent and is about to take her vows to become a nun, but before she does, she's told to go and meet this woman who knew her parents and who can help her find out about her past. So she meets this woman, Aunt Anna, who she matter-of-factly informs Wanda that her real name is Ida and that she's actually a Jew. Her parents were killed during the war, but she has no idea how or where they're buried. So they set off on a quest to find out all this important information. And Wanda is a very soft-spoken woman of faith, of course, and while Anna is a prosecutor, a very important prosecutor who lives a more liberal lifestyle and is kind of battling some demons on her own. And this is kind of the first time Wanda has been outside the convent. In a way, she's sort of seeing the world for the first time. So it's a very it's a very leisurely paced movie, and at 80 minutes, it's like the perfect length. But it's also, it's a really beautiful film about, you know, God and godlessness and, you know, sort of facing a life of, celibacy without having yet really seen the world and, you know, whether or not you know, this person is going to maintain that lifestyle. But the thing about this movie is, well, it tells a very involving story and it's beautifully acted and everything. Every single shot in this movie is like beautiful, is just perfect. It is one of them. It is every shot you look at, you're like, man, I want this shot framed and put on my wall. Oh my God, this shot I want framed on my wall. Like the whole movie, you know, it's just, it's beautifully shot in black and white, in 1:33 Academy ratio, strangely enough.
and it is just a really exquisite and beautiful piece of work. If you should see it on the big screen, if you can, it is definitely counter programming for the summer. I mean, it's Jewish or Polish black and white, subtitled movie, post World War II, and kind of somber. So definitely not summer fare. But if you're looking for something to just kind of feast your eyes on, while also getting involved in a really interesting story, definitely go see this film.
Wow, that sounds great. That's a great review, man. Great review. All right,
yeah,
Ida.
It's playing at River East, the Music Box, and Evanston.
Okay. Ida, that's quite a recommendation. I really like this director's movie called My Summer of Love. You remember that movie?
Gave us Emily Blunt.
Yeah. You can be grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Does she kick ass in the Tom Cruise movie?
Yes.
Oh man,
yep.
She's so cool.
Yes, awesome.
All right, cool. All right, everybody, hang on. You guys, hold on. That's Colin and Eric, and we got more movies to review and on demand stuff as well. And you can call us at 312-981-7200. Quick break. News is coming up next, and then we will wrap up the movie reviews right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here until midnight when the lovely Amy Guth comes in from Red Eye Remix. And we're reviewing the movies. That's what we're doing. Colin and Eric are here. And yeah. By the way, tomorrow at the UC, Steve Cochran and Dave Ennett and myself are going to be broadcasting from the UC. Before the game. I believe the remote starts at 5, and I'm probably going to get there around 6. So, but you'll hear me there. And then I am coming in early Sunday night into Monday morning, and I will be following the Hawks game. Patty's got the night off, so they're having me come in a couple hours early, and I'll be following the Hawks game. So, yeah. So there you go. It'll be a me sandwich. You got me before the game. You got me right after. After the post-game coverage. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some more movies to talk about, so let's bring back Eric and Colin. Hi, guys.
Hello.
So you guys, have you heard about what's going to be happening on at the MovieCo Theater on Tuesday?
Well, I know you're Smoking and the Bandit event.
Yes.
Happening.
Yes, but we have, like, a special thing that's going to be happening at this thing.
Coors is going to be served?
Yes, Coors is going to be served, but here's how it's going to be served.
Uh-oh.
We're wheeling a keg into the theater,
mm-hmm.
of Coors, and it's $10 to get in, but if you pay another $10, all the Coors you can drink out of that keg.
Oh, good.
And that's the perfect movie for that kind of special.
Yes. only if the Coors is actually stolen, though. I know
that's the thing. We have to smuggle it. We got
to
smuggle it in somehow, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the special, man. There's going to be barbecue specials on the menu too, Southern style barbecue specials. So it's going to be a good night. It's only $10 to get in. Smokey and the Bandit on the big screen. Just come to watch Jackie Gleason, for God's sake. And to watch how unbelievably un-PC this movie is. I mean, when was the last time you guys saw it?
A year ago, maybe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty stunning, the stuff that they kind of get away with in this movie. It's like,
I love casual 70s racism.
Oh, man. And there is no more casual racism on display than in Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, it's kind of stunning, actually. But I love the movie. I always have. It was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. So, you know, I was 12 when it came out. So, of course, I've seen it I saw it like 800 times in the theater. So we're watching it on the big screen, digitally remastered. We've got a lot of pre-sales already. So you should probably go and reserve your seats right now. It's very easy. Just go to MovieCo.com. That's M-U-V-I-C-O. M-U-V-I-C-O. MovieCo.com. Follow it to the seating chart. Pick the seats that you want. And they'll be waiting for you. It's only $10 to get in. Popcorn is free. Parking is free. And Coors. You pay an extra $10. You can drink all the Coors you want until we drain the keg. So I've already told Dan, my producer, that I'm going to be drunk Tuesday night when I come into work. So anyway. All right. What do we got here on the on-demand front? Tell me about Delivery, The Beast Within. This isn't a remake of the 80s classic The Beast Within, is it?
No, it's not, unfortunately. It's actually a documentary following around Kim Kardashian as she's pregnant.
Hello, wait a minute. I see. Ooh. Oh, man. I don't have a rim shot down here.
Well.
My rim shots are upstairs, man. All right. Anyway.
No rim shot, no echo. What's going on?
I don't know, man.
Anyway.
On Saturdays, I'm not in my home studio.
Okay.
My studio is upstairs on the seventh floor, and so that's the studio that I use, and I'm very comfortable up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, what's the? Oh, by the way, let's do this right now. Next week, why don't you guys come down and we'll do the 6 month, half year thing.
Already?
Which?
It's June, man.
Okay.
Don't we do it in June or do we do it in July?
We usually do it like after June.
After June, okay. Well, then don't worry about it. Forget it.
Oh, okay.
We'll do it at the beginning of July. We'll have to do it early because I'm on vacation for like 10 days in July.
Right.
Hey,
so,
hey Nick.
Yeah.
Go to instantrimshot.com.
Now then I'd have to put the audio on the I'd have to put my computer on, right?
Yeah.
Instant, what is it?
Instantrimshot.com.
Wait. You got it?
There you go.
That's good, man. All right, cool.
You know something? Theoretically, we could actually do it next week. Because if you look at what's coming out in June, are we really expecting a couple of these movies to appear on any of our top 10 lists?
I don't think so. No.
Things Like a Man 2.
Which one?
I got
Like a
Man 2.
Conflict next Saturday, so.
You have a conflict next Saturday?
I mean, I'm calling in, but there's no way I'm going to make it into the studio.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
Never mind. But,
well, don't worry about it. We'll do it. Maybe we'll do it halfway through, like before I go on vacation.
Okay.
Because I'm taking like 10 days off. So.
I'm taking vacation end of June myself.
Are you? Well, your birthday's the end of June. Mine's the beginning of July.
Yes.
So that's why there's time off. It's going to be like the first time I've had a vacation. Well, you know, I used to not have vacations because, you know.
Right.
But now it's going to be the first time I think I've had my birthday off in a long time. So, all right. Well, what the hell, man? Delivery, The Beast Within.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of joking, but tell me if I'm that far off.
Right.
Delivery tells the story of Kyle and Rachel Massey, a young couple who agree to document their first pregnancy for a family-oriented reality show. The production spirals out of control after the cameras capture a series of unexplained events, leading Rachel to believe that a malevolent spirit has possessed their unborn child.
Wow.
There you go.
Wasn't there just another crazy pregnancy movie?
Devil's Do,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. A lot of, like, pregnant bellies with, like, fists punching through it.
Yeah, and I believe both are found footage movies.
Uh-huh. That's fantastic. All right. And to go right along with that, you got that fantastic piece of crap, Rosemary's Baby.
The TV version.
Oh, man. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh.
I couldn't be bothered.
It's brutal. Oh. It wasn't quite as bad as Dracula. But, I mean, outside of Hannibal, NBC's doing horrible things to horror. They really are. All right, okay, Dragon Guardians. Want to explain that?
Animated film. Something spooky is happening in Dragon Hill, and a sudden change in climate has plunged the land into a deep freeze.
Uh-oh.
Fate of the forest rests in the hands of its protector, a little elf named Robin, and his misfit dragon companions. Together, the would-be adventurers must summon a team of guardians to uncover the mystery that threatens their home and stop an evil dragon before it's too late.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds like... Well, you know what? There is a movie coming out in June that I'm actually that could make my list, and it has the dragon in the title.
Yep.
Yeah. So that
one. And this animated film is also in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
All right. So it's the other animated dragon movie.
Yes.
All right. Gore Vidal in the United States of America. I know that this is a documentary.
It is a documentary. It starts off and says this is an unashamedly opinionated film. In Gore Vidal's America, the political coup has already happened. The right have triumphed, and the human values of the liberals have been consigned to history.
Uh-huh.
But how did this happen, and who organized it? In this film, Gore Vidal's acerbic, opinionated, and informed approach rips away at the facade of the new America.
Huh. All right.
Okay.
Well, I guess that depends on whether you're a Gore Vidal fan or not.
Right.
So, okay. Lucky Them.
Lucky Them. This film's actually getting some pretty decent reviews. The plot description isn't much. It says a rock journalist is assigned to track down her ex-boyfriend, but the cast involved is pretty solid. Toni Collette, Thomas Hayden Church, Oliver Platt.
I've seen the trailer for this one, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of Joanne Woodward is a voice in the movie. There are a lot of names in this film. You probably don't even want to go down too far because it looks like there's a cameo appearance in there. But this is actually getting some pretty solid reviews. So this one might be the one to take a look at out of the on-demand.
Out of the on-demand ones. Okay, that's called Lucky Them, and it's on-demand right now. All right, you guys, hang on. We'll come back and talk about the new theatrical movies, okay?
Cool.
All right, hold on there. Hang on a minute. Now hold it. All right. We shall return. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios, looking over at Pioneer Court. And we got some movies to review here. Colin and Eric are with me, and let's welcome them back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, Colin, I believe you're the only one that saw this Angelina Jolie thing.
Yep, I guess so.
So tell us about it.
All right, Maleficent. This is another take on Sleeping Beauty, but this being a Disney film, it's most closely related to the Disney version of the story and not the Grimm fairy tale. So Angelina Jolie plays Maleficent, and we first meet her as a child at the beginning of the film, and she's a very lovely kid. She's like a fairy who, you know, lives in a magical village away from the land of the king. And the film builds upon this friendship between her and a boy from the other side of the tracks, Stefan. And they're somewhat forbidden to see each other because of how different they are. But they do, anyway, for many years until one day Stefan stops showing up. And the king, who wants to do away with this village and destroy all the magical beings in it, has a battle with these beings and with Maleficent, who defeats him. And he says anybody who avenges him will be king. Anybody who kills her will be king. So Stefan travels back to the magical village, and he's all grown up now, and one night he cuts off Maleficent's wings and brings them back to the king. And sure enough, he's king, he's married, he and his wife have a baby named Aurora, and Maleficent comes back to the kingdom and puts a curse on Aurora, and saying that she will die on her 16th birthday. And in order to protect her, the king, Stefan, enlists the help of three fairies to take Aurora deep into the village in this house where the curse might not take effect. But Maleficent hears of this and takes the child, who eventually grows up to be played by Ellie Fanning. So this is a movie that is it's a first time director, a visual effects director whose name I don't have in front of me at the moment.
Robert Stromberg.
Yeah, Stromberg.
Right.
And clearly, that's his forte, is special effects. I think there's a lot of special effects shots in this movie that are pretty great, pretty cool to look at. You know, some people are saying it looks a little too fakey, it's not special enough. But I don't know. For me, this is a movie based on a fairy tale, and I don't mind that it has kind of a fakey storybook look to it, and not an overly slick Avatar look to it. And I think Angelina Jolie is good. I think she's, clearly having fun with this part. I like what they did with her face. I sort of like the exaggerated cheekbones that they gave her. Again, going for a storybook look to it. Where this movie falls apart in a big, big way is the screenplay. This is one of the sloppiest and just poorly written films of the year so far. There's a lot of story elements that do not make a lot of sense. It seems like people are just kind of loving each other and then not loving each other at the drop of a hat. So there's a lot of characters whose actions are not motivated, they're not explained. They just happen because that's what the screenwriter demands. The movie is also trying to go for the same sort of sentiment at the end that Frozen tried and succeeded at, which is basically the idea that, the woman does not need a prince to come by and save the day. And this movie goes for that same story element, except it doesn't bother to explain why they introduced the prince character in the first place. I didn't mention the prince character in my synopsis. He comes in about halfway through the film and is basically just used as a device to not as a character who has no effect on the story whatsoever. They just use him as a way to get to this point of saying a woman does not need a prince to save the day, which is really disingenuous and stupid. I mean, I don't mind that sentiment in a film. I think Frozen did a very good job of doing that. But in this movie, it's just doing it for the sake of doing it. And so this is a movie that works on a visual level, but completely fails everywhere else. So I do not recommend it.
Wow, okay. All right. I mean, the trailers for it, I mean, visually it looks pretty cool. But, yeah. I was just not interested in it. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. You guys, hang on. We got a couple more movies to talk about, and we will do that right after we have some news here on WGN. Okay, and that's coming up next. Nick DiGilio here. Yeah, man. Movie reviews. That's what we're doing, man. And Colin and Eric always join me from eFilmCritic.com, and we've got a couple more movies to review, so let's get these guys back. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Hello.
All right, Eric, man.
Yeah.
Tell us about Cold in July.
Okay, this is the latest film from writer and director Jim Mickle, who last year gave us the terrific "We Are What We Are."
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you something. Yeah. I just rewatched that movie.
Yeah,
it kicks ass.
So good, isn't it?
Oh man.
Yeah,
and I love Stakeland too.
Stakeland is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, here's Cold in July. This is the latest film premiered at Sundance this year. It stars Michael C. Hall as a family man circa 1989 who wakes up one evening and discovers an intruder is broken into his house. And then to protect his family, he finds the intruder and shoots him dead. The next thing he knows, the father of the person he shot has arrived in town, an ex-convict played by Sam Shepard. And he's none too happy that his son has been gunned down by this seemingly random individual. And that's really all I'm going to tell you about the plot, because this story takes so many different twists and turns that describing it would just be a disservice. I'm talking like 15, 20 minutes in the movie. It just, the movie is constantly evolving into something different. And it's one of the many pleasures on display in this thing, because it's a film that sort of starts off like Cape Fear, and it's sort of, and then it evolves into what is basically sort of an Eric Red thriller from the 80s.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. Do I need to say any more than that? You have Michael C. Hall, you got Sam Shepard, you have Don Johnson in this film, who I don't think has had this much fun with the role since maybe Tin Cup. And like I said, this thing takes so many different twists and turns. The first half hour is incredibly intense. It has one of those climaxes that you just, the kind of climax that I wish every movie would just have. Just, I don't care what it is. There's the kind of climax that you want a movie to, a movie to end with. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to say that it's very entertaining. It hit me in all the right spots. It's a very interesting, a lot of fun, a really fun thriller. And like you said, it's right down to its Tangerine Dream-ish score attached to it. Jim Mickles is the real deal. He's a filmmaker to watch, and this film's on demand as well right now, but yeah, it's also in some theaters. Definitely one taking a look at. You might even want to see it in a theater, because it has a really great look to it as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So Jim Mickles the deal then, yeah.
He is.
All right, cool.
Cold in July.
Cold in July, available on demand and also at the movie theaters, as you would call it.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, and Colin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about A Million Ways to Die in the West.
All right. Well, this is a Western comedy from Seth MacFarlane, who also stars in the film as a very self-aware farmer who isn't very happy in the West because of the millions of ways you can die in it. His girlfriend, played by Amanda Seyfried, breaks up with him and starts dating a mustache cream salesman played by Neil Patrick Harris, who's one of the two villains of the film. But a strange new woman has just arrived into town, played by Charlize Theron, and takes an immediate liking to MacFarlane's character. The big problem, though, is that she is married to the film's other villain, played by Liam Neeson, who is about to ride into town to look for her after she's just run away from him, and to rob whatever he can rob. So there's lots going on here in terms of tones and storylines that aren't very interesting, even under the umbrella of a parody or homage. And this movie tries to fall somewhere in between a parody and an homage. On one hand, you have the MacFarlane humor, which takes shots at many of Western conventions, many of which have already been dealt with in Blazing Saddles, and even Rustler's Rhapsody, if you remember that movie.
I do remember that movie.
some of it, I think, is actually very funny, but much of it falls completely flat because he likes to repeat a lot of the same unfunny jokes throughout the film, and the audience we sat with did not laugh much at those repeated attempts at the same jokes. On the other hand, the movie plays its story straight. The relationship between MacFarlane and Theron is really hard to buy into, and all along I was thinking, well, she doesn't really like him that much. She's just toying with him because she has an ulterior motive of some sort, right? But no, it's actually a straightforward rom-com piece. And MacFarlane has cast himself in the romantic lead as a guy who is not that interesting or attractive. And I thought, well, I kind of was surprised he would go down this way, because I thought he was, you know, Mr. Meta, Mr. I'm going to make fun of every, you know, cliche and convention in the movies. I thought he was that kind of guy. The other problem is the stuff with Liam Neeson's character, who, again, is playing it straight. He's given nothing to do here except play a villain that anybody could have played. I mean, this was a great chance for Liam Neeson to turn in a really funny comedic performance. It's not something he's used to doing. But instead, they give him nothing to do. He's really boring here. Even in the movie Ted, when they introduced the villain late into the movie, the villain was actually funny. So this is a really kind of a huge mess of a film that I do think has some laughs in it. There were some moments in the movie where I was laughing hard, mostly, the kind of the weird throwaway stuff. But it's a really just kind of a failure in every other sense of the word. So definitely, unfortunately, not recommended.
All right. Eric?
Yeah, I think Colin and I were laughing at exactly the same spots in the movie. And like you just said, it's usually moments that seem kind of throwaway and just seemed, and in many cases seemed a little smarter than a lot of the humor that is on display. One of the big problems with the film is, like Colin just mentioned, is that he plays the film so straight that you would not believe that. You would think that someone else cast Seth MacFarlane in the leading role and not that he, had any part of writing this film himself. I know there are some people who are trying to describe it as a two-hour Family Guy episode, but that's completely misguided, because Ted was a lot closer to a two-hour Family Guy episode than this is. This doesn't have those throwaway references. It's not going completely meta the way Colin described. It plays it so straight that you're sitting there am I supposed to be buying into the plot here? We're 90 minutes in and we're marveling at a horse chase, through a train sequence, and what are we doing here, Seth? You said, Liam Neeson has nothing to do. Seth MacFarlane cast himself as the lead was a huge error of judgment. And if you're going to have a movie called A Million Ways to Die in the West, that should be more of a running joke throughout your movie, and you should not be able to count the number of deaths on screen on your two hands. Some of the better, some of the funnier jokes in the movie come when, you see one of these sort of unexpected death scenes. But even those they're very telegraphed. There are not a lot of surprises in this film at all. It's a completely wasted cast. I think Charlize comes off the least scathed, because I think she's at least doing what she's called upon to do, and I think, brings a little bit of warmth to a film that's just so all over the map. When I laughed, I did laugh hard a couple times, but very, very few, very scattered, in between a lot of dullness, and it's a huge misstep for MacFarlane.
I hated this movie. I laughed exactly once. And it involves a cameo of a comedian playing Abe Lincoln. That's the only time I laughed in the entire movie. I hated this movie. And you're talking about miscasting himself. This is as self-indulgent a movie, I think, as Chef is. Maybe even more so. His character is just dull and unlikable. There's no reason Charlize Theron should be interested in this guy at all, her character, at all. A lot of the running gags just don't work. All the stuff with Sarah Silverman and Giovanni Ribisi is awful and not funny. It was nice to see a couple of cameos. It was great to see Matt Clark show up, one of the great character actors of all time, And it was kind of nice that, Wes Studi showed up in the movie. But by that point, I was like, is this thing over yet? Because it's long. It's way, way too long. And I just sat there. I thought that the vulgarity was completely over the top. How many times do you have to see, do we really need a close-up of the diarrhea that's in the hat? Do we need that? And by the way, it's ineptly directed. This is a horrendously made movie. And here's the thing. I really like Ted. I think Ted is a very funny movie, and it's one of those deals where he was able to throw all those throwaway jokes that are, That's his calling card. You know what I mean? And yet he made a kind of a, he made a very vulgar but a very sweet movie with Ted. There's nothing going on. And I mean, yeah, you want to talk about a waste of Liam Neeson. And I mean, and Liam Neeson can be funny. I don't know. You guys saw that that episode of Life is Short with Ricky Gervais. That's one of the it's seriously one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yep.
And he's brilliantly funny in that. So he can be funny. Give him something to do, you know.
In the Lego movie.
Oh yeah, he's great in the Lego movie. And he did a bit with Key and Peele when they were promoting
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Now you know that Key and Peele do the valet parkers.
So no.
Key and Peele do this these two characters that are recurring characters, and they talk about action movies and they love them.
Okay.
And they keep calling them Liam Neesons. And because it was in the original script, they had a typo, and they were like, "No, let's keep it because that's the way these guys talk." So they like Liam Neeson's, but they add the S, but like Bruce Willie, they call him Bruce Willie. So anyway, they're talking about action stars, and they start talking about how great Liam Neeson is in Taken, and it's this huge hilarious bit, and so when Nonstop came out. Liam Neeson showed up in a bit with the valets.
Okay.
And it's unbelievably funny. It's really, really funny. But I love Key and Peele. I mean, you guys know that. There are a lot of talented people in this movie, and they're not doing anything. The whole mustache thing, we have to have a musical number about mustaches, and then you're supposed to remember. Is that song supposed to be memorable because they reprise it? Like, what are we talking about here? So there was nothing about this movie I liked except for that one cameo. The only time I laughed, and it wasn't because of the material. It was because of who it was.
Right.
It had nothing to do with what McFarlane wrote for him.
No.
It's just that there he is, and I'm like, oh, finally, something funny. But man, the crowd that I saw it with yesterday was minimal. First of all, there wasn't that mm-hmm. many people there, and except for maybe two drunk guys in the back, nobody was really laughing. Everybody was just I went with my buddy Mike View, and we were both just kind of sitting there looking at each other like, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely terrible, and a huge letdown after Ted. You know. And I don't see this thing. I mean, I don't think it's going to appeal. I don't think it's going to appeal to the same huge crowd that Ted did. Do you guys think so?
No. No.
No.
I mean, it's just not funny. I mean,
no,
I don't care how big opening weekend it's going to have, and apparently it's not going to have a very big one at all.
Yeah.
The word of mouth is going to be deadly on this. I don't think, you know, Ted, you know, was, you know, opened huge and was a big word of mouth success.
Yeah.
When it came out, I mean, I watch it every time it's on cable.
Me too.
It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, me too.
And we can harp on how, you know, the mistake of McFarlane casting himself in the lead role is, but it doesn't matter if he had Mark Wahlberg or Paul Rudd or, you know, someone of that ilk in that role. The material surrounding him is just as bad as the casting.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I just think it's a horrible movie. I mean, just. So poorly made. And I thought Ted was, you know, I thought Ted was pretty funny, and I thought it was, well, you know, the timing was fine, but everything in this movie is wrong, I think. I mean, just,
yeah.
And here's the deal. You know, I'm glad you mentioned Rustler's Rhapsody, Colin. I haven't heard the name of that movie since the 80s. But that was Tom Berenger, right?
Yes, it was. G.W. Bailey and Andy Griffith.
I totally forgot about that movie. But here's the deal. I remember Rustler's Rhapsody. I don't remember liking it very much. But I just don't. This is just a rule, okay? Don't make a Western comedy. Just don't. You know why? Because Blazing Saddles exists. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just don't. As soon as I saw the trailer for this, I'm like, okay. Here's the deal, man. I mean, we've got Blazing Saddles, and that is the quintessential comedy western, and nobody should touch the genre.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. It's like, you're never, ever going to equal Blazing Saddles. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're going to do racial jokes in your movie, you have to realize that someone already did it better you know, oh, yeah. years ago.
Well, I know that's his thing, too. That's McFarlane's right. thing, is to push the ethnic boundaries and racial yeah. jokes and stuff like that. But nothing's funny in it. And there's a... There's
the shooting gallery's funny.
See, I didn't think that was funny at all.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that funny. I thought it was a little disconcerting to have a Parkinson's joke yeah. and a Back to the Future joke in the same film.
I know. Yeah.
About that.
I know, I realize, you know, and, but I mean, there were times when, you know, the thing is, and I don't mind offensive humor. I'm not, you know, I'm not easily offended. And I mean, you guys have actually seen some of the stuff that I've written. So, yep. you know, yeah. you know how dirty I can get, and I don't yep. care, but, you know, I mean, they were just groaners, man. And there's a real arrogance about McFarlane in this movie, and just a real arrogance about the film. And it just had an ugly tone. It was just, you know, I don't know. There was a real arrogance about the whole thing, and the experience was just, I mean, I just did not.
It's not interesting enough to be ugly, though. So that's the thing. It's just like, I mean, maybe it gives you more time to consider it being ugly, because there's so much downtime in between laughs. But no, it's just not good.
No,
it's just not good.
It's a terrible movie. So, all right. What do we got next week?
Well, next week we got a good movie called Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. Is that the only one that's opening?
It opens next week. And also, another big one next week is The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Really?
I like that girl, man. I like her. You don't like her?
You can like her all you want. I just cancer romance.
Yeah, I know.
I don't get it.
I like her.
Okay.
I do, man.
Divergent.
And she was, well, yeah. But she uh-huh. was, she, and also because she was really, really great on Craig Ferguson's show last week.
Oh, okay.
So now I like her even more.
Okay. I didn't see her there, so.
Yeah. And I like The Spectacular now. I know you hated it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Colin, I know you liked it, right?
I like it. Yeah, okay. My niece is a teenage girl. She's she's the person they are marketing this film towards, and it's like her most anticipated film of the year.
And it is based on a book, right?
Like she like worships this author. Apparently, he's
Okay.
Worship Nicholas Sparks too.
Well, all right, yeah. all right, well, all right. Now, okay. Well, we'll see.
Wow, 125 minutes.
Uh oh.
125 minutes. I just saw
yeah.
it. On
wow.
Here.
Yeah. How long is it, A Million Ways to Die in the West? That was about 150
116.
minutes. 116. Oh my God.
Yeah. The next movie where Tom Cruise literally dies a million times in the movie is 113 minutes.
See.
Shorter.
And both of those, by the way, are shorter than Blended.
Yes.
Yes. That's true. That is 100% true.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, thank you, guys. We caught up on some stuff, and then we'll do it again. We'll do it again next week and talk about the old Tom Cruise movie.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Take care. That's Colin and Eric. We'll see you guys later. So they join me every Saturday to review movies, and you can check us out at efilmcritic.com. You check those guys out at efilmcritic.com, and we have the podcasts that pop up all the time when we're done reviewing the movies.